What's up? Welcome to the Back Row Super Show.
This is Zach.
And Stuart. And this week, we are doing...
Dragon Con 2018 coverage.
Woo! We went to Dragon Con. Now, this is a con in Atlanta, Georgia.
Uh-huh, yeah. It was held for 5 days this year. Normally, it was... Or in previous years, every year I've been, it's been a 4-day convention. It's just been the Friday through Monday because it's Labor Day weekend.
Yes. This was the first time that they did 5 days. Yeah. Now, this was also the 31st year?
I think it was 31st year because it started in 86.
87. It started in 87.
Oh, 87. Yes. Right.
And it's 2018. 18. So,
yes, 31.
Math.
That's why you're here.
To get all of your math podcasting in.
Oh, yeah. So this year it was August 30th through September 3rd.
Yeah, Thursday. So now, because a lot of people went to this convention and they would have a pre-convention party day on Thursday. Well, the convention decided, hey, we'll just throw an extra day onto our convention.
Yeah, like in previous years, they would offer content on Thursday, but it was usually like really crowd participation type stuff, like maybe some dances, maybe some karaoke.
Yeah.
Something like that. But this year, they actually had programming, which was a first, I believe. It was definitely the first year they sold Thursday-only badges.
Badges, yeah.
Which they sold out of.
They did, which was amazing. It was... The Thursday badge was only $10. So that could be a factor of why they sold out so many.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, because I will say, to get into this convention, at the door, on, you know, the first day of the convention, it ended up being around $175.
If you were buying at the door.
Which is kind of expensive, but there's a lot of pre-sales, where you're buying your badge, like, a month or 6 months in advance.
Yeah, they stagger the price. It eventually creeps up, but, you know, my wife and I, we bought our badges, I think either at the convention or after the convention last year, for this year, and so the price was... I believe $85 per badge. So you're really getting a deal if you buy it a year in advance.
Yeah, because you could buy this year's badge and then next year's badge, and the next year's badge was $85. So that's a big jump from $85 to $175.
Yeah. Now, they also, more and more conventions do this. I know that 221B Con, which we covered earlier, also has a thing where you can buy basically an eternal membership.
Yes.
Usually those conventions are smaller, and the eternal membership is usually in the $150, $250 range.
Yep.
Dragon Con's eternal membership is currently sitting at $3,000 per badge.
Yikes, yeah. I've been going to Dragon Con for... a long time. My father was a member of a local newspaper here in Atlanta, and he drew comics. So he would always get a free badge to Dragon Con, plus a guest, and he would bring me as a little kid.
Of course.
Yeah. Now, I remember their eternal membership badges only cost $500 back in the day.
So my first year at Dragon Con... Mm-hmm. Was 04, 05, I believe. And I remember in the store, you know, all my, like, the only reason I went is because all my friend circle at college here in Atlanta were all going to it. And I said, okay, well, I'll get a badge. And I remember going to the Dragon Con store website and seeing eternal membership, $500. And I go, wow, that would be really good, but I'm a college student, and I've never been before, and if I like it, maybe I'll think about doing it next year. Well, they doubled in price the next year, so as a college student, I definitely couldn't justify it, and even as a grown adult...
$3,000's a lot,
because, I mean, basically, you would have to go, what, like... If you bought your badge a year early every year, you'd have to go... What is that?
You would have to go about 30 times.
Yeah, you'd have to go another 30
years.
Also,
how many, just an estimation, how many years have you been to Dragon Con?
So, I have been...
Just an estimation.
I took 2 years off. So, 14... So, 12 years mm-hmm. at this point. So, I've been 12 times at this point.
Okay. Probably a good estimation for me is about 15 years.
Yeah.
I was going when I was in high school. I had a lot of firsts at Dragon Con. I went to my first concert at Dragon Con.
Was it Gwar?
It was Gwar.
Hell yes.
Yeah. a lot of firsts. I'm not going to get into all of them.
Because you saw Gwar when Dave Brocky was still alive.
Yeah, I saw amazing. Gwar when I was in high school. Probably not the best band that introduced me into all bands, but...
Whatever.
I had a white shirt, and then when I came out of the concert, I had a red shirt.
Yeah, well, I mean, they're all their stuff washes out.
Mm. Yeah.
But
so,
enough about Gwar.
Yeah, so Dragon Con. It was a really amazing event. So, some numbers. First of all, we got the numbers, and there were about 80,000 attendees this year.
Yeah, more or less. Yeah. And that's over the course of 5 days.
Not 4 days.
So that's not 4 days.
Last year, on their 30th, which was really big and hype, they brought in a lot of names, just because it's a nice round number, 30. Yeah. It was also 80,000, but that was over 4 days, not 5 days.
Yeah.
They did project that they were going to have 85,000 people, so they kind of were a little bit lower than what they expected. But I could tell that it was a lot better organized. I didn't feel like I was trapped in one hotel trying to like get through a sea of people.
Yeah, I mean, this year it felt a lot more like the attendance was at a more managed level,
mm-hmm.
Because I know in previous years before they kind of figured out what to do when they were busting at the seams.
Yes.
It was...
Those were trying times, though, too.
Yeah, they were really trying times, and I used to remember getting frustrated a little bit.
Yeah.
Now, this is still a lot of people, but they've also, like I said, added programming on Thursday, and one of the tracks I noticed that they had, which I didn't go to, because I've been enough times. A lot of the Thursday programming is you know, con attendance for newbies, or how to deal with large crowds if you're an introvert or have social anxieties.
Yeah.
Luckily, I don't have debilitating social anxieties.
I don't think
so. I didn't go to it personally, but Dragon Con does offer a track, or not a track, but a panel to kind of guide people with social anxieties and how to navigate the convention with the amount of attendees that are there.
Yeah. And I also believe that their security was on point, too. So a lot of the years, their security hadn't been on point. So you would get a mix of people who have badges plus people who tried to sneak in there, just the people watch. Now, this year, there were a lot more checkpoints and security guards checking badges.
Yeah, pretty much every hotel... Basically, the way it used to work is the hotel did not provide staff in... What a lot of attendees refer to as the Habit Trail, which is kind of the sky bridge that connects the Hilton to the Marriott to the Hyatt.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you could get into one hotel, you could kind of attend the entire convention for free, or you could kind of, you know, if you were more crime-oriented, kind of break in and kind of see what's going on and case places.
But, yeah, because a lot of people would... do enjoy people watching, so they would come into those hotels and people watch, which would just have a more influx of folks, which would make things more crowded, which would make things harder to go through. Also, for the people who aren't from Atlanta, Dragon Con covers 5 hotels. So you have the Marriott, the Hilton, the Hyatt, the Sheraton, the Westin, and then America's Mart.
Yeah, America's Mart was added 6 recently, but America's Mart is not a hotel.
Yeah, it's not
America's
a hotel.
America's Mart is where, and pardon, I've been going to this a fair amount of time, so I use the word vendor hall and dealer room interchangeably, because the dealer room used to be a section of the Marriott.
Yeah.
And then they moved it to, I think they moved it to the America's Mart from the Marriott,
since yeah.
I've been going.
Yeah, and now they moved all the gaming, the board games, the role-playing games.
Which is 24-7, or no, not 24-7, 24 hours a day. You
yeah.
can access the gaming
yeah.
stuff.
They also moved that to the America's Mart. Now, I believe the America's Mart is probably the furthest event area for Dragon Con. So, I know that some of the dealers were kind of complaining a little bit, just because it is a bit out of the walking path of a lot of people. But when I went there, I know that they had a line, like, going way back, just to buy stuff. Anyway, we are going to basically run through this like we
yeah.
normally do with our con conventions.
Yeah.
We'll go through day by day, sort of stating what we did that day, what panels we went to, what events happened, what cosplays we were wearing.
Yeah,
things
yeah.
like that.
Now, we, now as a, I always like to put in a little bit before these about how, especially with Dragon Con, it is just kind of a open season geek fest,
yes.
basically. So, you know, they had over, I think they said, 5,000 hours of programming. If you were to go
yeah.
to every single event, if you had a time turner from Harry Potter and went through the convention, there was 5,000.
Nice,
yeah, I know, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, they had 5,000 hours of programming, which is just shy of a year, I think.
Yeah, there's stuff for everybody.
So this is just the con as we experienced it.
Mm-hmm.
You could be completely 100% different, zero similar interest as us.
Yeah.
Go to Dragon Con, have a completely different attendance experience, and still love it just as much.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is, both me and Zach are similar in our interests, but we didn't even really overlap a lot for
yeah.
this convention, because there were super niche things that we both wanted to do, and they basically were separate things. So both me and Zach kind of have a different experience, or had a different Dragon Con experience than what we would normally do with a smaller convention where there was less offered. So we usually go
yeah.
to the same panels.
Yeah, usually smaller conventions have a more focused experience. Like
mm-hmm.
with 221 BCon, a lot of things there were focused on Sherlock. With,
yeah.
One that's coming up that I'll probably talk about in a me, because I'm volunteering at it, is Conjuration.
Oh, so you actually are volunteering.
Yeah, I am.
Nice.
And then Wholanta obviously focuses on Doctor Who.
Yeah,
and
then there was the Otherworld panels, which, you know,
yeah.
we both enjoyed, so we went to a lot of those same panels. But with Dragon Con, I think we only went to one panel?
Maybe two.
Two?
But
eh.
but something that I was just looking at on my phone while you were talking is that attendance at Dragon Con my first year was 20,000 plus.
Oh, man.
So when was your attendance year?
Oh, gosh. It was way back when. It was, I believe it was 1995.
Yeah, because you've taken some years
so
off.
I did.
So it was 14,000 when you first went.
Yeah, geez.
Now, granted, when I went, it was just the three main hotels, the Hilton, Hyatt, and the Marriott.
Yeah, that was the same here. And it's nice because all of those hotels are connected with sky bridges,
yeah.
like you were saying. Yeah. All right,
so,
you want to dive into it?
Yes, let's
right.
dive into it without any further ado.
Let's talk about Wednesday. Wednesday's now the new pre-gaming yeah, day.
Yeah, yeah,
it was nice because we all, a couple of us in our same friends group, we went to the
Trader Vic's. Yeah, Trader Vic's
yeah.
in the basement of the Hilton. It's during the convention, it's insane to get a table there. We had a reservation and we still ended up waiting about 45 minutes.
Yeah.
But
it's awesome. Just there were people cosplaying on a day that wasn't the convention day. And it's really cool just to sort of go there the day before the convention, because a lot of people are pre-gaming for the convention. They'll wear costumes, they'll be talking with each other, they'll be having drinks and just enjoying each other's company.
Yeah, I mean, I know it seems like it gets earlier and earlier every year, because I have a friend that I've made from working at other conventions, and on Facebook, he's in tech ops, and so they load in a little bit early before the convention starts, and at like 8 or 9 in the morning, he was just like, "Well, saw my first drunk congoer on Tuesday."
On Tuesday, wow, yeah. So it's really interesting that since Thursday's now official day, Wednesday has become the pregame. And it's going to be funny when Wednesday becomes an official day.
They should just take over an entire week. Just do a week and call it done. That way there's more stuff to get to.
But I will recommend, if you're not 100% sure on Dragon Con, come on Wednesday. You don't have to buy a badge. You can kind of get a small little taste of what Dragon Con is and sort of make a decision from there.
Yeah.
So that's what we did on Wednesday. We all met up with each other. We went and had some drinks over at Trader Vic's. It was a great time. So let's move on to Thursday.
Okay. All right. So Thursday...
Zach, take us away.
So Thursday, the panel that I went to was... The History of Thanos.
Ooh, Thanos.
So it's funny. They put this panel. It was kind of a talk on the origins, obviously, as it sounds, the origins of Thanos in comics. Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing about what the convention chose to do is this is the year, kind of the year of Thanos, where you know, Infinity War just came out.
Yeah.
They put the panel in what I would estimate to be a 40 to 50 person room.
Ooh.
There was a crush to get into that room, and there were still people just kind of standing in the back because there were no chairs. It was a very good panel. This guy knew Thanos inside and out. He had written magazine articles on Jim Starlin, who created Thanos.
Cool.
He had insights into the character, and kind of aired some dirty laundry about how Marvel operates.
Ooh.
Regarding
like
their
what?
Treatment. Well, so like, Jim Starlin, the guy that created Thanos, had to pay for his own ticket to see the Avengers, where Thanos is unveiled at the end, you know? He also mentioned that you know, Joss Whedon just kind of threw him in there as just kind of like a, well, they'll figure it out later type thing. Like, he never intended for Infinity War to happen.
Interesting.
And it was interesting to hear how when Disney bought Marvel Studios, they just kind of took over all of the rights to all of the characters, whether they were creator owned or not. Mm-hmm. And Starlin had no recourse to it, except he found a journal from when he was in college, when he first started writing for Marvel in the 70s, that showed that, no, he had this idea for this character well before he started writing for Marvel proper. Hmm. And so they owe him a little bit of that pie.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I don't think it's ever been disclosed how much he got from it, but...
But he's getting a little bit.
But he's getting a little bit of that pie. It was probably not a royalty. It's probably like a really large payout since it was this movie. But, you know, Disney seems to have made good where Marvel kind of screwed him over.
Well, that's good.
And, you know, we discussed the Thanos copter. I think it's hilarious that was a thing.
Thanos copter. Yeah, the helicopter?
So there was a period in comics history where... Starlin is really the only guy that writes Thanos, and he wrote that into the story after other writers who were writing cosmic storylines could just kind of pick up the character and do what they want with him.
Yeah.
And so the Thanos copter is just this helicopter that says Thanos written on the side of it.
I mean, you gotta fly around in style.
Well, yeah, but like, it comes up in a storyline where, like, he's robbing a bank for money and Spider-Man fights him. So, like...
Yeah.
So Starlin's answer to writers doing this is anytime you don't see Starlin writing Thanos, that's not the real Thanos.
Oh, okay.
Those are clones. Thanos kind of is this genetic scientist, and so he wants to see the different possibilities that would happen.
Okay.
So there's an answer. If it's not Starlin, it's not real.
Yeah, because I've seen a couple of, like, articles of who's beaten Thanos by themselves.
Yeah.
But, again, those weren't written by Starlin. Those were written by other people, so not official Thanos clones, I assume.
Yeah. And the other thing that was really interesting just to hear is this guy's met Starlin, interviewed him several times, and pointed out a book that's really comprehensive, but he was sharing these things that he'd picked up in interviews with the guy that's kind of like dirty laundry, like behind the scenes type stuff that I really, really kind of like, but it's like you have to talk to these people to get it because no official biography is going to put stuff in there. Like, one of the stories that I've heard, and I don't know the veracity of it, but Jack Kirby is just this kind of rough and tumble, no nonsense kind of dude. Like, he's an old school dude, like capital D, right? And some reason or another, someone down in the lobby of wherever he was working at the time found out where his office was and was calling him from the building directory and insulting his work and trying to pick a fight with him. And so he went downstairs and he beat the shit out of this guy in front of everyone in broad daylight because he wasn't having any of it.
When was that? What year was that?
Late 60s, early 70s.
Where you could actually do that and like not get sued.
But yeah, it's like industry stories like that I find really fascinating. And that was honestly as enjoyable as hearing about the history of this really interesting character.
Yeah, so, sounds like a good Thursday panel.
Yeah.
Start off the con.
Yeah, it was a really great way to start off the con. Mm-hmm. After that, grabbed dinner and went to bed. So
nice.
Really, I did stuff on Friday and Saturday.
Yeah, so on Thursday, I went to a Geeks single mixer.
Oh, how did that turn out?
Yeah, so my con actually didn't start off super great. So I went to this mixer thinking, they're going to be like tables, you're going to sit down and talk to people and stuff like that. So when I went to the location that it was being held at, it was basically a lecture hall. So we're all sitting in chairs while this one guy's talking on a stage. So the guy talked about his website, which was like geared towards single geeky people, which was great. I'm glad that you're promoting yourself. Great. And then, so the panel was only about an hour. And we hadn't really talked to each other because that's what the mixer was supposed to be, was like talking to folks. So the person hawked their website and then he was like, all right, we're going to do a icebreaker. I'm going to put little stickers on the back of your shirt that have different characters and you'll go around and ask somebody one question and they'll give you a yes or no. And I said, all right, that's pretty cool. So he pulls out this big old, sheet of stickers and he's like, all right, everybody line up. Now, it's about 200 to 250 people and it's just one line and he's putting stickers on the back of people's shirt.
That would take the better part of
an
hour to do that.
Yeah, which unfortunately I didn't want to spend the time waiting in that line to get my sticker just to talk to people. So I decided to leave early, which was unfortunate. But, afterwards I went to a dance. It was the 8-Bit Dance, which was supposed to be like a club, and they were going to do 8-Bit music, which was really cool. And they also had a video game system set up with a bunch of old cabinets. So you could play, and they were all free.
Was at the 8-Bit Ball?
Yeah, you could play some cabinets, like Centipede.
I ended up not going to that because last year, that's what it seemed like would happen there. Mm-hmm. But all that it was just a dance room with screen captures of old video game stuff playing in the background. And I was like, Oh, I thought it was going to be a dance party with video games.
Yeah, so it was, they had cabinets, and then on the big screen, they had Street Fighter, I believe it was Turbo. So you could play on the big screen against other people.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I did play.
See, I thought that they did that last, like, oh, yeah. We'll see now in the future, I gotta go to it.
Yeah. I was a little, my only grief was they played a bit of, like, old school retro video game music, but a lot of the music that they played was, like, club music, which is great. You know, I'm glad to, like, dance with club music, but, like, if you're going to be an 8-bit dance, play a lot more video game music than just, like, club music.
See, I do remember that being my issue with it, like, because, like, it just seemed like a rave with, like, random modern, like, electro music.
Yeah.
But like the only 8-bit about it was that I think the DJ had, like, a Space Invader for a head, like, a helmet.
Yeah.
And they were playing screenshots or video of, like, old video games.
Well, I will say they did play some video game music, which was very much appreciative. But then they played a lot of, like, club music, which was like, okay, that's great. But can you get back to the video game music? I did play some people in Street Fighter Turbo. I won a couple. It ended up being, like, the old school arcade rules where if you won, you kept playing. Like, more challengers would come and
they
would challenge. Yeah, but once you lost, then you would have to give up your spot. Yeah, so after, I think, the fourth came a ringer who actually knew how to, like, throw fireballs and do Hayukens and everything. So, it was a close battle, but I lost. I danced. It was a lot of fun. But, again, it was Thursday. I took an Uber there, so I left around, like, 12.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Well, my panel on Friday, the first one of the day... Well, not first one of the day. I think it was like a 9 or a 10 o'clock panel. I think it was a 10 o'clock panel.
Mm-hmm.
Was Dinosaurs with Brian Henson and Kirk Thatcher.
Dinosaurs.
Now, Brian Henson is Jim Henson's son.
Mm-hmm.
He still does a lot. You know, the Happy Time Murders, I want to say he directed that.
Oh, yeah.
Came out, and Kirk Thatcher was one of the writers on Dinosaurs. Yep. And so they were just kind of sharing. Do you remember that show on ABC?
I do.
From a kid? Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember that. I loved that show, and my brother was terrified of it for some reason because of the animation or the way the puppetry worked. Yeah.
And this was a panel from the puppetry track, right?
Yes, this was in the puppetry track. The talk was really interesting because you know, they were sharing some of the behind the scenes of, like, well, yeah, here are some sketches from what this character was supposed to look like. Originally, you know, the grandma who was in a wheelchair and super crotchety and old or whatever, they were going to have her originally be like a pterodactyl that hangs in the closet and just, like, pops its head out for comedic references and then goes away. But Network wanted an actual puppet, like an actual actor in there. One of the funny things that Brian Henson shared was that when he was getting or when they were getting Dinosaurs ready, the contract he had to sign with ABC basically said, like, he was responsible for everything under the sun. Like the list went on and on and on, things that he had to guarantee that he was going to be responsible for if this happened, or if this actor hurt themselves, or whatever, what have you. And then the thing that ABC was responsible for was clearing the channels. And that was it. Like, the one thing that they did.
Yeah.
And so his business manager apparently advised him against it, and he was just like, well, I mean, this is a really unique idea. I'm just going to go ahead, because this is just the business.
Yeah.
They're shooting the first episode. I think he said it was the first episode, and the heads on all of the dinosaurs are controlled remotely with remote controls by multiple operators.
Cool, yeah.
And they all have to be on a different frequency.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, all the characters would respond the same way. So each different part for each different character has to be on a different frequency.
Yeah.
Well, they get maybe an hour into shooting the episode, and there's this, you know, the set gets interrupted, and it's a carload of military police. And they need to speak to who's in charge.
Yeah. Well,
Brian Henson is the one in charge, quote unquote.
Yeah.
And so they speak with him, and what has been happening is that the frequencies that they were using for the animatronics were messing with the jet fighters on the nearby military base.
Jeez.
And so he called ABC and said, you know that thing you said you were going to do? You were going to clear the channels?
This falls
under what you're responsible for.
So clear them channels.
So clear those channels. So that was a funny, like, inside bit of
that's pretty
stuff
cool.
to go
yeah.
on. And really, you know, when you go to... I'm not usually drawn to celebrity panels because, you know...
They can fill up pretty quickly.
Well, they fill up quickly. Like, even this, I had to line up fairly early for, like, at least 45 minutes or so beforehand.
Which,
even with
actually,
it being an early day, that's an early lineup.
Yeah, and it's not bad for Dragon Con, where in previous years, if it was a big name, you would have to line up, like, 2 hours early or something like that.
Yeah, which, I mean, I'm sure is still the case sometimes, but the line management has gotten better in that they can walk down the line and go, okay, if you're past this point, you're not getting
in.
Someone leaves.
I will say, line management was a lot better this year.
Yeah.
I got into a couple of panels with big-name folks that I didn't think I was going to get into. But I was able to get into just showing up like 45 to an hour early.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, the interesting thing to me about going to the quote-unquote celebrity panels is a lot of times they're with actors, and while actors might have an interesting insight, I'm more interested in the people that actually put down the line. Like, I'm less interested in the performance than I am the writing, necessarily.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I went to this because, you know, Brian Henson actually... I want to say that he was in the writer's room. Kirk Thatcher was in the writer's room.
Yeah.
And you know, hearing the people who actually did the thing that I appreciate and enjoy, it's much more enjoyable for me.
Yeah.
Which is really the only reason I went. I think this was the only one that I went to with celebrity, because the a lot of the panels I go to are in the game design track, because I like hearing game designers talk about how they came up with their things.
And there are some celebrities, but like they're board game celebrities.
Yeah,
which
like
doesn't
not...
bring as many people as like, you know, TV celebrities or puppet celebrities.
Yeah, they're not. Like Mark Hamill or Carrie Fisher or William Shatner.
Yeah.
They're not walking around with their own private security.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, we're
just going to volleyball.
Yeah.
I'm done with that. The dinosaurs panel was awesome. It was...
Nice.
Oh, I will... One last thing. It's really interesting to see with, like, Brian Henson. The moderator was someone who used to be an assistant for Kirk Thatcher. And so...
Cool.
She was kind of keeping them on track and bringing up things that... You know, they were supposed to be talking about, like a good moderator.
Yeah.
And it's funny, I could tell that Brian Henson didn't have anything really prepared.
Yeah.
But, and you know, it's really obvious if it's just two guys who were running the requisite number of panel hours to get a free badge.
Yeah.
But with the professionals, like Brian Henson, even though he didn't come to it with anything pre-prepared, he has enough experience, and he has enough time doing things like this at conventions that he could just off-the-cuff respond and tell stories, and it's still as captivating, I thought.
Nice.
So yeah, that was my first panel on Friday. What did you
do? So my first panel was this year in anime, which was down in the anime track. The person who was hosting it wasn't a big name anything. I think it was just a fan of anime. And basically, we went through this year, 2018, since a lot of interesting anime came out, and just sort of talked about them. I did when My Hero Academia came up, had to walk out because I'm still not caught up, so I didn't want any spoilers. So I only caught half of this. But there were quite a few particular animes that I've added to my list of growing things that I need to watch. So Black Clover is a big one that everybody's, like, praising.
I haven't heard of it.
Yeah, so it's a shonen sort of anime with these two characters.
Okay.
One's apparently kind of whiny, and the other one's kind of like... It's a Naruto and Sasuke sort of feel, where Naruto's the whiny, like, super crazy ability one. The other one's more a silent, focused person who, you know, is okay. trying to get shit done.
I'm glad you defined that, because I was going to be like, I've never seen Naruto.
Yeah. that's my go-to anime. I stuck it through. I watched Naruto and Naruto Shippenpo, but boy, am I not going to watch Boruto. Boruto, yeah.
Hard lines.
Hard lines. Okay. No Boruto. That's Naruto's son. I guess he couldn't get creative with names, so he's like, I'm just going to name my kid just after me, but change that into a B. Call him Boruto. Yeah. So, and then there was another show, Overlord, which sounded really interesting.
That's a manga, isn't it?
It is a manga. Okay. That's been adapted into an anime, and it's basically this kid who gets sucked into an MMO. It's not... It's sort of similar to Sword Art Online. That's what I was looking for. The S's. But he is a villain, not a good guy. And he's, like, maxed out all of his stats and stuff. So he's, like, trying to be the evil villain. And he has a plan, and he's trying to act upon that. At least that's what I got from the description. So, it was really cool. It was basically a open panel where the moderator was talking, and then people in the audience were also adding particular suggestions and stuff like that. Sometimes those panels can be hit or miss, just because it's a random person who's doing it. So, you don't know if you're going to get the person who's deeply invested and passionate about this subject, or the random person who's like, I got a bit of knowledge. I'll run the panel. Get my free badge. So, it was enjoyable. Again, I had to split halfway through because people started talking about spoilers of My Hero, and I have not finished that, and I don't want to be spoiled. So, luckily, I've avoided spoilers. So,
well, good.
Yeah, I'm still fresh. I've still kept my virgin ears
clean and unspoiled.
Yeah. So that was my panel.
Okay. So after that, I went to, and I think you joined me on this.
I believe so. The board game design?
Yeah, board game design. Yeah. And on the panel was Keith Baker, who designed Gloom and many other games.
Yeah.
Mainly card-based games. He's also worked with the Decembrist to design a game based on an idea that I think their guitar player came up with.
Cool.
And Bill Fawcett, who started Mayfair Games, which has been in the industry forever.
Like, yeah.
You can tell he's an old salt when it comes to...
Yeah, some of the suggestions or ideas that he was pulling out, you could really tell that he was old school.
And it was fun. It was not at all what I expected, but it was nonetheless enjoyable. What I expected was, based on the pitch, was... These guys were going to kind of walk through their
process
in designing a board game, what works, what doesn't, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
Which they kind of did, but it was a very interactive panel. What happened is they would throw out some just generic ideas at the beginning and go, okay, by show of raising your hand, what type of game should we design based on what the audience said?
Yeah.
And they would talk about the pros and cons of both, both ways of doing something. Do we want it to be a turn-based thing? Do we want it to be cooperative?
Yeah.
Competitive? Do we want it to be a Euro-style, modular?
Yeah. Because they also talked about, you know, prices. They talked about, like, producing the game.
Yeah,
they,
Bill Fawcett really had more insight into that because he's runs Mayfair Games. Mm-hmm. And so Keith Baker's just a designer. I'm sure he knows a little bit about it just to keep. But he mainly does card stuff, which is cheap.
Yeah.
And he's more of a designer. Bill Fawcett has designed games, I believe, but he really had more insight in, okay, if you want it to be an area control game, that means this much in pieces, this much in board. If you want it to be modular and replayable, it's going to be another X amount. You got to pay for art.
Yeah. They even talked about, like, the kickstarting angle and everything like that.
Yeah.
About, you know, 3D printing particular figurines and stuff. So it was really, I thought it was really cool, and I thought they had a lot of good ideas to share upon everybody.
Yeah, I will say, just in terms of attending panels, this is not to call out anything. If you are attending a panel...
Really?
And, yes, really, because it's important, because it's the first time it's really happened to me before.
Oh, boy. We're going here.
Yeah, we'll go here. If you're attending a panel, and you're only halfway interested in it, and you'd rather talk to the person next to you, you should leave or speak
in a whisper.
Yeah.
Like this. So the person next to you can hear.
You shouldn't speak like this so that I have to strain to hear the panel and the moderator.
Yeah. But yes, so after that panel, I believe we had lunch. Yeah, we had lunch.
Yeah, we did lunch and then went to the networking.
Yes.
The how, when, and why of joining a podcast network.
Wow, podcast network.
Yeah.
Seems like it would be right up our alley.
So, I came to a realization sitting in the panel.
Yes.
I'm pretty sure, based on what they were saying, we are a two-person network, because...
High five. Yeah.
We have a number of shows. We have this convention coverage. We have a main topic.
We do.
We have a me. We talk about things that aren't, like, 100% ready for, like, a full-on episode.
Yeah.
They're just things we've been doing. And then we have a book club.
Book club, yeah.
And we've been talking, kind of, about maybe doing some Twitch stuff.
Yeah. Here and there, throwing occasional just videos up. But, yeah, so we are a network we do a multifaceted amount of different things.
Yeah, apparently we're a network.
Which was super cool.
But, no, it was very good to hear the perspectives of people who were there on the panel, because all of them were either part of a network or did a lot of work with networks. One of the guys there was worked for a podcast station in L.A.
Like, yeah.
So, like, that's, I mean... You know, making money off of...
Yeah, and it's cool to hear, like, people's experience in getting picked up by a network, or if they were a network looking for different podcasts and stuff like that. I definitely felt good, like, I could pat ourselves on the back, knowing that we've hit that hump and we've gone over that hump. Apparently, it's that 5-episode hump of, like, oh, this is a lot of work. I don't want to do this.
Oh, yeah. So there's a statistic somewhere where I read where most podcasts fail, or not fail, but they just stop producing after about 10 episodes.
Yeah.
Because
people don't realize the work that goes into it.
Well, and I didn't realize it until we started doing this.
Like,
and really, I didn't even 100% realize it. For those that don't know, the way it used to work is that Richard would edit episodes and then send them to me, and I would do my thing with them, which is easy.
Yeah.
Then I took over editing.
Yeah, because I can't edit.
Yeah. And so doing that's a lot of work. Like, you gotta keep...
Yeah.
Yeah, like, editing takes a while, or at least for me, because I'm not a professional.
Yeah.
And
then scheduling these meetups and stuff, because we come over to my place and we do it all on my computer.
Yeah.
So we have to, like, figure out schedules. So, yeah, it is a lot of work. So I'm happy that we have continued to do this,
yeah.
and we've gone over that particular hump, because they said that, like, after 5 or 10 episodes, people usually just give up because it's too much work.
Yeah, and ladies and gentlemen, we are at, I think the David Bowie one was 39.
Yeah.
So I think this
that was a solid episode, too.
That was, yeah, it was.
If you haven't listened to it, you should definitely give it a listen.
Yeah, absolutely. Go listen to it. The panelists for the networking panel for podcasts were great.
Mm-hmm. Also, we met one of our fans there who won the contest. So
yeah, well, won a tier of the contest.
Yes.
Yeah, so I was able to pass off the book to him, Tony at Geek Versus. Well, you know, I chatted afterwards with him and kind of was we were commiserating over podcasting difficulties.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was fun. I feel like I botched a networking role because he introduced me to who I looked up later and realized was, like, the head of the network that was there.
Oh, no!
And so he was talking, and he's just like, yeah, no, this is Zach. He's with Backroom Super Show, and we're talking, and he goes, this is, I forget the guy's name.
But yeah.
He goes, this is this guy, and he does this podcast, and I was just like, cool, so do you like it? Like, I had no idea who he was. So it pays to be aware of people in your region who are into the same things.
Yeah.
There's plenty of Facebook groups that are focused on podcasting. So if you're interested in it, just do it. All you have to do is, you don't have to worry about quality or anything.
Yeah,
you can
record
on your phone.
Listen to our podcast, and you can tell
the
quality.
Yeah, listen to the things that we did on that digital recorder in my living room before
man.
We figured out to put a towel down and kind of absorb some sound.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
And unfortunately, I wasn't able to meet him because I had a costume contest that I had to get to.
Yeah, what was your costume?
So, my costume for Friday was Lil Mac. I dressed up as Lil Mac.
Tyson's Punch-Out? Oh, Punch-Out, I guess.
Punch-Out, yes. Mike Tyson's Punch-Out, or it was later released on the Wii as just Punch-Out.
Yeah.
And then he was also in Smash 4. So,
oh, he was in Smash. Okay,
yeah, he was
gotcha.
In Smash. Yeah, a lot of people had stopped and talked to me. It was super cool because there were a lot of people who recognized me. I didn't think it was going to be that big of a costume since Mike Tyson's Punch-Out came out on the Nintendo. And then it got re-released on the Wii. And then he's only been in Smash Brothers 4, which is the newest iteration of Smash Brothers.
Yeah.
So I didn't think a lot of people were going to notice me, but a lot of people did. I got a lot of pictures taken. I know when we were walking together, somebody had a bingo card and
yeah,
they were
like,
looking
Little
for
Mac.
Yeah, they're like, you filled out my bingo card. I was like, awesome. I met this one guy, this Jason, who really loved Lil Mac, so he got somebody to take a video of me punching him in the stomach as he was coming with me or coming at me with his knife.
Machete, yeah.
Machete. It was pretty awesome. So I thought I was going to sign up for the video game costume contest.
Yeah.
Well, they had a pre-judging, basically panel where you would have to go and they would pre-judge and make sure that everything was A-okay. So that happened right after the networking. So I had to run over there to get my costume prejudged. It was amazing seeing all of these costumes. And it was really cool sort of seeing a behind the scenes of a costume contest. Because I really hadn't done any costume contests.
Yeah, so what is that like? Because I've never done a costume contest. What is that like in the backstage area and getting prejudged and all of that.
Yeah, so we were all sitting around. We all lined up. I got there just in time. So as you're entering the door, they would give you a number.
Okay.
And they only had a preset amount of numbers. I actually got behind this one couple because you could bring a handler if your costume was way too big.
Which there was a lot of.
Yeah, there were a lot of large costumes, and I'm glad that they provided an extra spot for a handler.
Yeah.
So it was this couple who were electrical engineers.
Oh,
which
wow.
was super cool. Yeah, we were talking a bit about like engineering and stuff like that. But I don't remember exactly what her costume, like what video game her costume was. But it was basically a nine-tailed fox in sort of like a maid outfit. But with the tails, she had lights basically going through and like lighting and...
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. And the
pretty baller.
Yeah. And the power source was two iPhone battery chargers mashed together.
Wow.
Which was super cool. So I started talking to them about their costume, and then she pulled out like a binder of how they created their costume. I was like, she's probably going to win.
Well, so yeah, I guess if you're actually competing at that level, like, yeah. I guess you have to have a binder to prove, like, I worked on this, I did this, this is how I tweaked
yeah.
that. Okay.
So when I was looking through the binder, it was basically stages of their costume.
Okay.
So it was so like stage one.
Spent.
Yeah, of like, oh, I spent this much time doing the steam of the maid outfit.
Gotcha.
I spent this much time putting in the wires for the tails. I spent this much time, like, putting PCP pipe to create the tail movement.
PVC.
Yeah.
PCP
yeah.
is something else.
Yeah, that's a joke. Oops. But yeah, so it was amazing. So we all sit in this, like, lecture room, and we're all sitting down, and then the three judges are up at the front of the room, and then they'll just basically call you by name. Or call you by number, not by name. And you fill out this piece of paper, and they call you up. And the paper is, like, what your character's from, any particular attribute about your character, and how much time you spent on your costume. Unfortunately, with Lil Mac, he's basically in a black-white beater, or a black-wife beater.
You should probably call that I think it's called an A-line shirt now.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's the political term?
Yes, that
yeah.
is the... Yeah, that is not the...
I guess that's pretty bad, yeah.
Yeah.
Boxing shorts, green boxing shorts, and, like, green boxing gloves, and boxing shoes.
Yeah.
A lot of this stuff I have because I've been taking boxing classes.
Yeah.
So I was able to put it together pretty easily, and I didn't actually create anything. Which was...
But cosplay is cosplay.
Cosplay
there are different levels of doing it.
I will tell you, I look a lot like Lil Mac. Like, if you want to know what I look like, just look up a picture of Lil Mac.
I may have a picture of you from Dragon Con that I'll post as soon as these go up, but...
Yeah, you'll have to show me, just to make sure
okay.
that... yeah. I also have a picture of me punching Richard.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so that might have to go up, too.
But also, you're shorter in stature, so...
I am. But I've got that short black hair, and I'm gaining some muscles in the arms, so, you know, got some biceps.
Getting ripped.
But it was really cool just to see everybody's outfit, because when you're at the costume contest, you're not as close as I was with the prejudgment, because you can look at people's costumes, and you can start talking to them,
yeah.
asking them how long they took... I had this fantastic conversation with this guy who was Shepard from Mass Effect.
Oh.
Yeah. And he had created basically armor out of that foam that you
yeah.
can manipulate. And we were just talking and he was like, yeah, I'm doing this for my younger kid because he super loves Mass Effect and I'm here just to show him that he can do anything.
How young is his kid?
I have no idea. I didn't ask him. So, it was really cool just to see him do this, just to show his son that he can do anything.
Yeah.
Because he was telling me, like, this is my first cosplay. I've never done this. I just watched a bunch of tutorials on YouTube. And his outfit was really cool.
Yeah,
I'm sad that...
Some people have different levels of being able to do that.
Yeah.
Like that, yeah.
I'm sad he didn't win anything, but, like, his costume was awesome. So... just sort of, like, looking back at this, I was really glad that I did this. When they called me up, they're like, so, how much work did you put into your costume? And I was like,
tied my shoes.
I basically have this because I box. And they're like, oh, okay, cool. But they still allowed me to join.
Cosplay at every level.
At every level. With Dragon Con, it's a lot about the people. I know with Comic Con, a lot of professional cosplayers cosplay, and that's about it.
Mm-hmm.
With Dragon Con, there's all sorts of different tier levels of cosplay, where you'll get people with, like, not that great of costume, but they're funny. And they look like the particular character that they're cosplaying, so you get it. And that's one of the things I really like about Dragon Con, is that there are people out there who put in the work, who may not be professionals, but they get it done.
Yeah.
So it was a lot of fun. They basically prejudged us. They took us behind the scenes at the hotel, basically going through where the servants and stuff go, and we were able to get to the stage. We did basically a little performance. I did a little boxing thing. They asked us some questions about our costumes. We answered them, and then three people won. Cool. The girl who had the fox outfit won. Which, definitely, no surprise. Some guy who had created all of his armor, basically out of foam, and his weapons out of foam, who was a Monster Hunter from Monster Hunter World, won.
Oh, there were a lot of Monster Hunter cosplayers this year, yeah.
Yeah, it was a popular game, so yeah. I can understand. But, like, that cosplay is really hard to do, and you have to be dedicated, because a lot of those armor pieces are huge and spiky, so... Props to them.
Yeah, it's just... That's like the people that... Like, I know someone from a random game night that... I think BuzzFeed showed his picture as, like, cosplay.
Yeah.
But it was a Warhammer 40K cosplay of Space Marine. And it was basically... He had to rig a harness on top of his costume to hang other pieces on.
Yeah.
And layer it. Because they look very particular.
Well, the third person who won was Junkrat, who was in a D.Va costume from Overwatch. Well, in a D.Va mech from Overwatch. So he had the mech and everything, and he had to, like, attach things to his legs. He had moving pieces, which was amazing. There was another person who entered as Bastion from Overwatch, and he had, like... His hand was able to manipulate, like, he could move his fingers and point at people.
Hmm.
He had movable legs. It's amazing just to see, like, what people construct on their off time for cosplay. So, that was really cool, and it was a very enjoyable time. I definitely will think about, like, doing another costume contest, but I will probably do a costume that I put more time into than just, like, Lil Mac, who's very simple.
Yeah.
So that took a good chunk of my time, because it was the prejudging, then they got us up to the stage, and then we had to do our performance, and then we were waiting for other people to do their performance, and then the award ceremony. So I didn't get out until later that evening. So you can take it away.
Okay. So... I went to the science fiction gaming panel.
Oh, nice.
It was Monty Cook from Monty Cook Games.
Yeah.
He also was the lead designer on 3rd edition D&D. He's designed Numenera, whole lot of stuff. Yeah. He's kind of one of the bigger names in game design.
Did
right
it
now.
Bring in a lot of people?
The room was more or less filled, so I would say probably 50-60 people in that room.
Okay.
The other people on there were Jamie Chambers, who he worked on the Firefly RPG.
Oh, cool.
And Eloy LaSanta, who pretty much is Third Eye Games.
Oh, wow.
They're an indie game company. They put out a lot. I want to say that they put out a lot of Powered by the Apocalypse stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny, the biggest takeaway from that... Because all of them have some hand in designing science fiction games.
Yeah.
Is that the thing that separates science fiction gaming from fantasy gaming in terms of roleplay is how does your character accomplish something?
Yeah.
Is it with a beep or is it with a whoosh? Because if it's a whoosh, it's fantasy.
Yeah.
If it's a beep, it is science fiction.
that's solid.
I mean, yeah, that's solid advice. Yeah. It was mainly a Q&A. Like, they basically talked about their experience in games. Monty Cook, I think, is the one who threw out... It may have been Eloy Lasanta who threw out the is it a beep or a whoosh thing, and then it was a Q&A panel. So nice. I left after the... Or once the Q&A section started, I stuck around for a few of the questions, and a lot of them were kind of the, like, where did you get your start?
Mm-hmm.
Gaming type thing. So
stuff that you already knew.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, like, I've seen... pretty much all of them speak before. And so I, you know, was also getting texts and I was like, okay, I'm hungry now. I'll go to dinner. But no, it was an interesting talk. Anyone who's interested in how role-playing game design works, I highly recommend seeing Monty Cook speak. He is probably one of the better game designers out there.
Oh, nice. He's a big name.
He's a big name. His Kickstarters consistently pull in hundreds of thousands, if not a million or more dollars.
Yeah.
He's kind of up there with like a John Wick. I wouldn't quite say Gary Gygax level, but you know, he's certainly put out a lot of quality stuff, and he knows what he's talking about from experience, or just because he's a really, really good game designer.
Yeah.
So yeah, anytime you can see him speak, go see him. The other two panelists were very good as well, but it's always a pleasure to hear Monty Cook speak.
Yeah.
And then. After that, we both did the K-pop dance party, right? Did you go to another panel?
I went to one additional panel.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so when the costume contest let out, I had actually given my phone and my wallet to you.
Yes.
Because, unfortunately, boxing shorts do not have pockets.
Yeah.
Which super sucks. But... the costume contest actually got out earlier than expected.
Hmm.
So it gave me an opportunity to go to a panel that I knew that I wanted to go to. So I went to Gamer Dating Game. So I got there halfway through.
Okay.
Just because when the costume contest let out, it was halfway done. So I popped in and... it was like the dating game, where there's one person who's blindfolded, while there's five other people who sit in chairs, and the moderator asks questions, and you basically, you know, say your answer to the bachelor or the bachelorette.
Yeah.
It was super funny. And again, you know, this wasn't like you trying to find a date or anything like that.
Yeah.
It was just craziness for crazy's sake. So when I got there, they had picked a lady, so they were looking for guys. So, of course, I raised my hand because I love performing and talking to people.
You love being the center of attention.
Kind of. So the way that they were picking out people was... he would count off. He would be like, all right, you're one, you're two, you're three. And he actually picked me last. He's like, you're 21. And then on his phone, he said, phone, pick a number 1 through 21. So it was like 8. So the person who was 8 got up there. Then he asked his phone again, and then it said 22. I was like, 21's close enough. So I ran up there. I was like, I'm 22. He's like, I don't know how that worked. I asked for a range between 1 and 21. How did he get 22? I was like, close enough. So he asked his phone the third time to get something else.
Yeah.
And it said 22 again. I was like, I'm already up here. So it was a gag. But while I was up there, you know, they asked questions. It was into windows and stuff like that. Like, if you had a sonic screwdriver, what kind of sonic screwdriver would it be? And then, you know, people would be like, oh, well, it would be one that had two vibration settings. One for the low impact, and one for a high speed get you done sort of deal. It was funny. It was just like improv trying to be as silly as possible.
Okay.
And it was a good time. I got to, again, perform and be silly and kind of raunchy, and it was a good time. But when we all piled out, the guy who was moderating it was definitely laughing, and he was like, I like you 22. I was like, I'm 21. And after that, yeah, I met up with you. I got my wallet, got my phone. We ended up going to the K-pop dance. We danced it out for a good long while.
Yeah, K-pop really has some interesting stuff that comes out.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it. The late night dance parties, I think also going on at the same time were probably three other dance parties. So, like, there's things to do at night.
Yeah, there are a lot of things. But it was also really cool because they were showing the video that went with the song. So you would try to sort of see what they were doing and emulate their dances. Yeah. But it was fun. Got to dance. You guys ended up dipping a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
After the K-pop, I went to the Heroes and Villains Ball.
Oh, how was that?
It was nice. Again, it was just mainly club music. Okay. So we were just dancing around and stuff like that in costume, just enjoying ourselves. It was a lot of fun.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, was that your Friday?
Oh, I'm sorry. It wasn't the Heroes and Villains Ball. It was the Can't Stop the Signal dance.
Can't Stop the Signal.
Yeah, it was a Firefly. You remember when they set off in Serenity, they set the signal.
Yeah.
So it was a Serenity dance. Gotcha. Yeah. Saturday is actually when I went to the Heroes and Villains Ball.
Okay.
Again, it was a lot of similar music. You would think that they would play more nerdier music, but they ended up playing like club music, which is fine. It got me dancing. I definitely want to try to go to like a dance party in the future.
Yeah.
I thought they were a lot of fun. You meet interesting people and talk to folks, so it was cool.
Cool.
But yeah, that was pretty much my Friday.
Okay, cool. Well, Saturday, I spent a large part of the day in the, just in the vendor halls, and then also going to the artist alley. So I'll talk about vendor halls kind of at the end when I talk about the things that you buy. Because that was sprinkled throughout, but Saturday morning is really when I went because the line was really moving.
Yeah, well,
and it was super easy to get into at that time as well because the parade was going.
Yes. Yeah. Do you want to talk about the parade?
I didn't go to it. So.
Yeah, I didn't go to it either.
Okay, I've been once because I was trying to get to the Marriott from north of the Hyatt.
Mm-hmm.
And I basically had to take a surface elevator down to the MARTA station and then jump the platform to get up to the Hyatt. Or just basically walk on the walkway to get underneath it. Because once you get in the parade traffic,
you're stuck.
You're stuck. Hope you like parades.
Yeah. And I do like the parade for Dragon Con because it gives people an opportunity who don't have badges, who aren't going to the convention, to see a little bit of the convention.
Yeah, the parade, I guess that is true. Like, the parade is for people to just spectate and watch.
It's a good time to go and people watch without paying the ticket fees, basically, because it's free. You can go and watch the parade and it's free. I did catch the parade on YouTube.
Yeah.
They have, basically a highlight reel because I believe it's aired on one of the local, networks here in Atlanta.
Oh, yeah. It's,
I forget which
network. I forget the channel it's on. But yeah, no, it's also televised, I think, and maybe on GPB.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's kind of a staple for people who want to see some of the costumes and stuff, and see the groups of people that are willing to walk that parade route, because that's a really long... You've done it before,
yeah,
right?
I've done it. I was part of the Lord of the Rings group.
Yeah.
I walked around as Frodo.
Yeah, I think my wife made you the brooch for your cape. Yeah.
It was awesome. She made a fantastic brooch.
Yeah.
Yeah, I walked barefoot down Peachtree. Yeah. Got all sorts of diseases.
Mm.
But I powered through it. Because I'm a Superman. Oh, man, look at that spike. Yeah.
But yeah.
I will tell you a quick fact.
Sure.
About the parade. What do you think was the most popular costume? The most represented costume in the parade?
Deadpool?
No.
Oh.
It was actually the Jawas.
Really?
The little sand people, yeah.
Really?
So, apparently, there are sections of Star Wars. You have the 5th or 501.
501st, yeah.
Yeah, which is just a legion of stormtroopers. But then you have Jawas, the, like, Jawa section of it.
Oh, wow.
So there was a bunch of just little Jawas in their robes and their gun. And they brought a sand crawler. An actual sand crawler.
Oh, wow, that's
cool. It was, I believe, 2 cars, and it was made out of cardboard.
Oh, I did see that
on
DragonCon TV.
Yeah, it was amazing, like, what they put together.
Yeah.
But it was a particular section that they had called all their people to come down, and it was about 100 Jawas just walking around.
Jeez.
Which is interesting, because with stormtroopers, you can really, like, customize your stormtrooper armor, being, like, a storm or a snow trooper or, like, an indoor trooper.
Yeah, but
Jawas...
with
Jawas, it's just straight up, you got a brown cloak, you got glowing eyes, you got a little gun.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's really interesting.
Yeah, so that was really cool. That's a little fun fact for you.
Yeah. Well, the Artist Alley, there are a lot of good artists there. I met, hands down, one of my favorite living artists.
Ah, nice. Who?
Brom.
Brom?
Yeah. You know Deadlands?
No.
Deadlands the game? I
oh!
Mean, you've run it
oh,
before.
Oh, Deadlands!
I mean, that's
why yeah. I thought you were talking about, like, a comic or something.
No,
yes.
He did the cover art.
I have Deadlands, like, right there.
Yeah, the skeleton dude with the guns.
Oh!
That's one of his paintings. It's actually from a
novel,
a graphic novel animated book, or illustrated book that he wrote called Devil's Rose.
Cool.
About undead cowboys that ride bikes with giant horse heads.
Nice.
Yeah, but yeah, no, it's really cool. I bought an art book that he put out. I actually got the last one.
Nice.
He had with him.
Did you get him to sign it?
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah,
I got him to sign it. But I was talking with him. I was just like, you know, I could kick myself. I have a copy of Devil's Rose and of Plucker, which is another one of his, like, he has these books that he has written a story to, but he also has pieces of art inserted.
Ooh.
You know, I had them set aside, and in the excitement of packing the car, I left them at home.
That's
and nice. He was just like, he's like, you know, if I'm back next year, feel free to bring them. I don't mind signing stuff. Like,
that's really
those are
cool.
Awesome. Yeah. He's a very nice guy. And it's funny, the guy in front of us in line was buying a couple of prints. And my wife actually bought a really cool print, but he does... So it's funny, the guy in line in front of us was talking with Brom, and he was a really big fan because he was buying prints of his, generally sold for $40 or $50,
mm-hmm.
and this guy was buying, if I had to guess, probably $200 or $300 worth of prints.
Jeez,
from him.
Yeah, yeah.
But Brom has had the original of some pieces, and they were framed very nicely. But I didn't have $8,000 to spend on a painting.
Yeah.
Even though I loved it.
Yeah.
the thing I like about his stuff is that, like, he does a lot of kind of, like, dark fantasy art that, you know, fantasy art tends to be really objectifying in a lot of cases.
Yeah.
He is very good at treating dark, even though it's fantasy art, treating it as, like, a kind of a still life, but, like, a still life in another world, if that makes sense. Like the female characters that he paints and stuff are built like real people.
Yeah.
Like, he has an understanding of how a body should look, not what will sell book covers.
Yeah, you know? And, like, if the women have armor on, it's not going to be a bikini, because that protects nothing.
Yeah.
It's actually going to be, like, a full plate.
It's actually, yeah, it looks usable. And don't get me wrong, like, he has painted, like, erotic fantasy type stuff. But, like, there's a realism to even the fantasy art that he puts out that is really refreshing, that I prefer in a lot of cases. Cool. But no, he's a really good artist. You should check out his stuff. I hate that I left Devil's Rose and Plucker at home.
That sucks. Yeah. If I knew that he was going to be there, I would have brought
Deadlands.
Yeah, Deadlands, and have him sign that book.
I don't know if he would sell it, because it's just a picture that he sold to them, though. But yeah, I mean, I'm sure he would sign it.
Yeah.
It would be what would be funny and kind of insulting would be to take a Frank Frazetta piece and see if he would sell.
Why would you do that? Yeah. well,
so yeah, if you want to talk about what you did on Saturday morning.
Yeah, so if Saturday morning, I did party, so I got there around 12.
Okay.
Yeah, but my first panel that I wanted to go and see was at 1 o'clock, and it was over in the video gaming panel.
Okay.
It was an Let's Play.
Like a live cast?
A live cast of Five Nights at Freddy Sisters' location.
That makes sense, because that's a short enough game.
Yeah, and it wasn't like a long Let's Play, because it's only an hour-long panel.
Yeah.
But they had the voice actor of Freddy Fazbear, and if you don't know, Five Nights at Freddy's is a horror game. It's on Steam. It does deal a lot with jump scares and stuff like that, where you're trying to figure out a puzzle, and if you don't do it fast enough, there's a jump scare. But it's a fantastic franchise. It's got, I believe, 6 games out in its trilogy. Not trilogy, because that's 3.
6, really?
Yeah, in its series. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot of...
So they brought in 3 of the voice actors, which was super cool. The guy who does Freddy Fazbear's voice, the woman who does
Clucky.
No, the robot from Sister Location, and then another person. But they were, you know, talking about the experience of voicing those lines, actually playing the game, kind of getting jump scared at their own dialogue, which was kind of funny because. When you're there and you're recording lines, you don't actually see much of anything. Like, you're not recording with anybody.
Yeah.
You're just recording a couple of lines. You don't see the final product of the game.
Sure.
You really don't see any gameplay. You might even be lucky if you see your actual character, like concept art or something like that. So you basically record all of your lines and you're done. So they didn't really know what was happening in the game. So when they played it, they would always get jump scared as well. So the Let's Play was a little bit of the game. And it was interesting hearing them talk while playing the game. And just sort of like figuring out, okay, we need to do this. But this is when my character comes in. So I'm going to be, you know, hearing myself talk. And it was just a really cool panel of voice actors and gameplay. And I believe it was the first time that Dragon Con has tried a Let's Play.
They have to have before.
I don't think they have, yeah. Huh. So, and it was this one person who had a Twitch channel. And they played it pretty well. And again, it was just really cool to hear the perspectives of the voice actors and what they thought their characters were.
Yeah.
And seeing them sort of react to their own dialogue. So it was cool. It was a panel that they didn't think was going to fill, but they had to turn people away at the door.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, Five Nights at Freddy is
a popular game. They sell toys in Target.
Yeah.
Five Nights at Freddy stuff. Yeah.
And there were a lot of children there, so...
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's like a Minecraft type thing, too.
Kind of,
like,
yeah.
The craze, I mean.
Because the thing is, this game is a horror game that doesn't really show blood or guts or anything like that.
Yeah, I think the kill screen on it is just like the animatronic thing getting in your face.
Yeah.
And like going,
basically,
yeah.
Yeah.
Like it's not...
So it's not like bloody or gory or anything like that. So it is somewhat kid-friendly, so there were a lot of kids there.
And it's very Twitch-heavy.
Yes. So, yeah, so a lot of people
stream it. Not
like
the streaming service, but like Twitch gameplay. Like, you have to be...
Yeah.
Very, very good with your hand-eye reflex.
Well, and a lot of people play Twitch. I guess the biggest name who's played this game, or who played all six games, is PewDiePie. Like, he's played it a lot. And actually, the voice actor, I forget his name, who did Freddy Fazbear, actually was able to talk to PewDiePie as he was playing and whatnot. I know you have...
Mixed
feelings.
With PewDiePie.
Yeah. So it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of, cool experiences with them playing the game and talking about the experience of doing voice acting, which was really interesting to me. Yeah.
That's really cool.
Yep.
I guess the other panel that I went to on Saturday in the afternoon was Horror in Gaming.
Ooh.
And it was with Ken Hite, who he's another one of these gaming not revolutionaries, but like one of the leaders in kind of game design.
Mm-hmm.
And he was talking about how best to use horror in a game setting. And he was talking about just the different levels that you can incorporate it into your game. So like, you know, he went back to Stephen King, I think he said, in Dance Macabre. He has a separation of different types of horror that you can use as a creator.
Hmm.
One is dread, which is you know, you hear the thing in another room or coming down the steps or coming up the steps or whatever. Uh-huh. You know, you hear it.
So this is role-playing games.
Yeah, this is role-playing
games. Not like board games.
No, not like board games or anything like that. But yeah, so there's dread, which is hearing something but not seeing it. Terror, which is when you are running from the thing that's coming after you because you've seen it.
Yeah.
And then there's gore, which is what happens when it catches you.
Now,
so
that's
depending
really cool
on the
concept.
Type of game,
yeah.
you can kind of bend that as far as you need to.
Do you get any examples of games that use those particular...
No, because he was focused more on mechanics. And again, this was another thing that I left during the Q&A section.
Mm-hmm.
It was a really interesting talk when he was just talking about how you can do mechanics to highlight certain things. Like, obviously, gore is just going to depend almost 100% on you explaining things.
Yeah.
But with Dread, during our Games Mastering episode, I mentioned something that I do to kind of increase tension.
Mm-hmm.
That he brought up in his talk, which was you can just give out bennies to people. And don't tell them what they're for. Make a random roll. Give them a bit. If you're playing Savage Worlds, make a random roll, look at it, go, and then give a random person a benny. Hurt you, which is a benefit. In Savage Worlds, it's a specific thing. It's like a chit that you can cash in for an increased die roll or something like that.
Yeah, just in case you haven't heard our podcast on game mastering.
So, yeah, and my advice, especially with something like 5e or Pathfinder or something like that, would be to have your characters randomly make a perception, or maybe one specific character make a perception check.
Yeah.
And just be like, okay. And then continue talking about something else. It just, it enhances the tension at the table for people to do
that. Yeah, it gives that uneasy feeling.
Yeah, but like, he even admitted terror and gore really just 100% depend on you describing things.
Yeah, as the game master.
Yeah. So that was fun, and it's always good to hear Ken Height speak, because nice. He has a lot of interesting insights in how to run a game.
I bet, yeah.
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 And so, I guess because I just have two more things, I'll just finish out my Saturday and
sure.
then we can go over, because you did a lot of stuff.
Yeah, Saturday. I do have quite a few more panels to talk about. So yeah, why don't you just finish it off?
Sure. So yeah, after the horror and gaming panel, I kind mm-hmm. of met back up with my wife and a couple of our friends, and I did a cosplay that I like to refer to as Mr. Party.
Nice. Oh, right. I saw pictures of that. That will haunt me. Haunt me until I'm dead.
So, to describe the costume and how I made it, I went into Party City and said, I'm willing to spend $20 on costuming supplies. And so I looked around the things, and so what I got were some blue fishnet arm sleeve type things.
Yeah.
A red nondescript mask, a blue mustache, a blue felt fedora, and a red cape.
Yeah, yeah. Gotta keep it classy.
I do have to keep it classy. So one of the things that was really funny is walking down through the Habit Trail between the hotels.
Mm-hmm.
Being able to see through the mask and see people's reaction of confusion and a little bit of fear, because a lot of people, the look on their face was like, what is that referencing and why don't I know it? Or it was, that's really friggin' weird.
That man must be really drunk.
He must be really... So yeah, no, it was fun. It was...
So it's now your new OC?
Yes, it's my new OC. I wanted to get a
don't
sign
steal
and walk
it.
Around and
don't
have,
steal it.
Have OC, don't steal.
Yeah.
Mr.
Party, or right?
Mr. Party, yeah, on like a name tag, but I didn't. But you know, like, I was wearing shorts and a Hawaiian shirt with this. All of that stuff breathes very well. When I took off the hat, at one point I had to take off the hat because it was just sweat pouring down my face. Like, it was way more sweaty than I had originally thought it would be.
Yeah.
So it gives me much more respect for the people that actually done, like, the 40K Space Marine armor. Like, that's insane.
Yeah, and speaking from on Friday, doing that Lil Mac costume, again, shorts.
Boxing gloves, shorts.
And a shirt.
A shirt, A-line shirt.
Yeah. Yeah, it's super nice.
And then while I was in costume as Mr. Party, my hands-down absolutely have-to-see thing at Dragon Con this year was the Cybertronic Spree.
Oh, yeah.
For anyone that doesn't know, I'm a huge Transformers fan. The Cybertronic Spree is a band that dresses up like Transformers and then plays. A la Gwar, but they play, like, 80s-style songs.
Nice.
And... like, they play You Got the Touch, and...
do they actually do combat on the stage, or is it just them?
No. It's nothing like that, because the two front people are Hot Rod from the Transformers movie.
Nice.
Playing bass, and he sings, and then RC, she's also a character from the Transformers movie. She has a hell of a good voice.
Nice.
She can hit really, really high notes and sustain them for long periods of time.
Very cool.
that like 80s rock feel that they had going.
Yeah.
They're definitely equipped for it. One of the characters on stage, I think he was playing lead guitar, was the Quintesson from the Transformers movie. He's basically a floating torso with five different heads.
Oh, right. I remember that guy from that movie.
Then Unicron is their other guitar player who plays like an eight string guitar, which his costume actually has like the skeleton of bat wings off of him, which was really cool.
Now, what kind of material was this made out of?
I'm assuming it's the same type of stuff that Gwar makes their costumes out of. Maybe, because it's more angular, I wouldn't be surprised if there's a little bit more, like, structure behind it. Because Gwar is kind of fleshy. But going back to how hot I was wearing that costume, on stage, like, we were maybe four or five people back from the stage. And so when Hot Rod's took a break from singing, he kind of had the mic up to his mouth and his arm was bent in such a way that I could see sweat coming out of his elbow.
Because
they're wearing basically leotards and then the costume on top.
Yeah.
I
mean, and they're moving around there too as they're playing and singing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and I mean, you know, they did some more modern stuff too. Like they did the opening to One Punch Man.
Oh, really? Nice.
But like that has an 80s metal feel.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, totally. It was super fun. This is my first time seeing them live because I think they're actually a Canadian band.
Oh, cool.
So they don't tour down here very often. And when they do, it's at like random cons because they're a con band.
Nice.
It was funny. Someone there apparently, I guess, Instagrammed or like contacted them through social media or tagged them in a post.
Mm-hmm.
And they brought him up on stage because that day of the convention, he got their band logo tattooed on him.
Oh wow. And so that's dedication
like,
there.
You were dedicated, sir. You deserve to be up here.
Jeez, yeah.
While we sing this next song.
Tattoo of a band logo. I bet you'll never regret that.
I wouldn't. Hell. But it was funny. I picked up a shirt from their merch table.
Yeah.
And you know, they have a couple of original songs, and I heard someone in line at another roadie or person selling merch for them.
Mm-hmm.
Go, "Oh, you guys don't have albums for sale?" And the guy was like, no, they, all of our music's, for free. You can donate. It's online because like, there's so much licensing crap.
They can't do. you do it on your t-shirts, your merch.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Like the merch that I got is this black shirt and it's, you know, the Motorhead Warthog, like motorcycle looking thing.
Yeah.
It's that, but it's RC's head. And so it looks simultaneously super metal and super geeky.
Yeah.
So I'm.
Well, there you go. You covered both of your bases.
Exactly. That's pretty much my go-to in terms of merch. But So that's what we did because they took the stage. I want to say at like either midnight or one or something like that. So
nice.
After that, I went to bed because I was
just
exhausted.
Man.
I'm an old man and I'm exhausted.
Got your old man walker.
Yeah, so, why don't you finish up your Saturday?
All right, yeah, so this is still kind of during the day, not during the night. I went and saw Night Fight, which was really interesting, yeah. They had an arena where they had knitting. It was sort of like a tent with knitting.
Oh, okay.
And then they would get two professionals in there, and they would fight with themselves, or fight against each other. Usually using like long swords or bastard swords. Some of them had shields and bucklers.
Oh, okay.
Or not shields and a sword and a buckler.
So is it like LARPing or so these were real or these were fun?
These were real. These, okay. Again, you know, they weren't like sharp or anything. They were dull, but this was an actual tournament where people would be scored points depending on what kind of hits they got. It was a legitimate, you know, tournament where whoever won would go and basically go to the bigger tournament. There were prizes on the line, which was super cool.
Okay.
It was a lot like, again, fencing and sort of kendo, where you're trying to make and hit those points and be defensive all at the same time.
Okay.
Which was super cool. And it was a very diverse crowd. There weren't just all men. There were men and women in there, and they would pair them up, not versus size, but just skill level. So it was really interesting to see. And there were a lot of big hits. Unfortunately, somebody did get hit. One of the sword guards on a bastard sword. You know how they're like crosses?
Yeah, there's a cross.
Yeah. Hit the man's helmet. And then they also have like fencing helmet and just like padding and everything like that. But it hit his helmet square on his forehead. Oh. So it indented his helmet and, you know, cut his head basically. Yeah.
And scalp it started, wounds bleed real quickly. Bad, yeah.
So he had to get pulled out, but he did get to finish his bout a couple hours later because it ran for quite a while. Okay. I didn't watch the entire thing, but it was pretty cool.
Cool.
And it was just amazing to sort of see the skills and techniques that people were using and the different skills and techniques for each different weapon. With, okay. you know, a finesse weapon as like a rapier, you're going to be trying to score more points just, you know, sure. doing your thrust. Yeah. yeah. And then, you know, with the broadsword, you would see a lot of people going down into, like, a defensive stance and holding it to sort of block people's attacks and try to move in. So it was really cool.
Well, how long was the average bout? Because I know fencing is pretty short, mm-hmm. And you have to be in really good shape to do that yes. with great swords and bastard swords and stuff. Like,
yeah.
You're swinging around 10 pounds of metal. Yeah. Like, how long were some of these bouts?
So, I didn't get to see the main bout, which I think was a little bit longer.
Okay.
But the majority of the bouts were about a minute and 30 seconds.
Okay.
So, gotcha. Not too
so,
long.
So, yeah, that's about what I would expect. Yeah. I was thinking, like, 3 would be the upper limit.
Yeah, that would be rough. yeah. Especially when you're swinging around. But, yeah, I think with the fencing, it did get into, like, 2 or 2.5 minutes.
Right.
But yeah, with these larger swords and with the people with their swords and bucklers, it was short rounds.
Gotcha.
But it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun to sort of see that. And again, they had the knit just in case padding flew off or
yeah.
if like somebody swung their weapon and didn't have a great grip and it went flying, they just didn't want audience to get hurt.
Yeah, exactly.
But it was a lot of fun. Cool. Definitely we'll go and see it again. They have a group here in Atlanta. Did not catch the name, but if...
Is it probably like... It's probably Society Created Anachronism, right?
Maybe. I'm not 100% sure. But if you're really interested in fighting with old-timey weapons, definitely look them up here in Atlanta. So after that, I went to a panel on Twitch 101. Just because, you know, we're... in the process of trying new things and stuff like that.
Branching out into some gameplay videos.
Yeah, yeah. Which I might be having one come up soon. You never
Absolutely.
Know. So it was really cool because they brought a representative from Twitch. This person was one of the software developers to develop the algorithms to determine what other channels you might like regarding your watch history, which was really cool.
Oh, cool.
And, we were basically just talking about, like, since it was a 101 or a 101 panel, we were mainly just talking about, like, user interface, how to start up, what kind of specs you need for your computer to run a well stream, you know, a stream that's not, like, dropping frame rates or,
gotcha.
You know, blacking in and out and things like that. Because, like, having a solid computer and having a solid internet connection, it's definitely good success to become a good streamer.
Right.
Yeah. So it was kind of cool. I definitely wrote down some specs. What we record here is on my old computer, which I've had for about 6 years now, but it's still doing strong. So
yeah.
I'm super happy about that.
Well, if you know what you're doing, you can make it limp along.
Yeah.
I think my iMac that I do all the editing and stuff on is mm-hmm. is getting up to 6 or 7 years old. It's limping along.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the nice thing with towers is you can change out a lot of pieces.
Yeah.
So you can sort of make your own Frankenstein.
Right.
But it was also really cool because there was a couple of other people who are, I guess, Twitch users that had been... Now, I always get these two terms mixed up. There's being certified, and then there's being... and Twitch partner. So those are the two particular levels. They were talking about how to get to those levels and everything along those lines. And they had a couple of streamers there, too, which was really cool because they were kind of... You could tell that these people had been streaming for a couple of years now, and they were just sort of telling you what to expect and how to, like, bring in some people. Again, when you first start streaming, you're not going to bring in, like, big numbers like some of these YouTubers, like Ninja or something like that. Having at least five people in your, you know, Twitch chat, or having at least like 100 people following you, is good enough. It allows you to be able to take donations.
Oh, cool.
So that's nice. Or get like subs and things along those lines. So that was really cool. It was kind of an interesting thing, just in case, you know, one of us want to dip our toes into.
Get some information
and whatnot.
And I'm sure that there's probably some strategy in selecting game. Like, you probably want to be playing something a little bit weirder and more niche to get more dedicated followers,
since
I would think.
Everybody's playing Spider-Man, Fortnite,
or Overwatch.
Yeah. So, yeah, you definitely want to, you know, find your unique style and your unique game. And again, a lot of people are doing, like, you know, a variety gamers where they're not stuck to one particular game.
Yeah.
They're going out there and playing other games and stuff like that. So that was a lot of fun. And then I got to see Tara Strong speak.
Oh, cool. Like, so was it a panel focused on the breadth of her work? Because she does a lot of different voices.
She does. She does. No, it was actually a Q&A. The entire hour was just nothing but people coming up there asking her questions. They did have a previous panel that I wasn't able to get to where she basically just talked about her, you know, work ethic, all of the voices that she's done, which she's done, like, Dante Phantom, Fairly Odd Parents, My Little Pony,
Batman?
I think Batman, she did something
yeah.
And other things like that. I'm sure there's probably more that I'm just blanking on at the moment.
Yeah.
But it, like, this was the first time I had seen her interact with fans, and it was super sweet. She's such a nice person.
Yeah, I've heard that. Like, I've seen that in documentaries, too. She seems like a genuinely nice person.
Yeah, and that was the great thing. Like, people were coming up and asking her all sorts of different questions, and she was more than happy to answer, like, any question that people had. And then people started getting up there asking her requests, like, oh, can you, you know, say happy birthday to my niece while I record you in a particular voice? And she was like, yeah, sure. She was more than happy to do that.
God, I bet that wears on your voice after a while, though.
I guess. I mean, depends on, like, the particular voice that you're doing and things like that.
Yeah.
And then there was this one girl who went up there, and I guess Tara Strong was, like, one of her idols, one of the iconic person in her life, since a lot of us grew up listening to her voice and everything like that. So when she got up there to ask her question, she just kind of froze and was stumbling and didn't know what to say. And she looked very, you know, like she was about to cry. So Tara Strong came down off of the panel.
Stage,
And she was like, oh, I guess you need a hug. Can I hug you? And it was super sweet. The girl loved that. And it just, you could tell that it made her day.
Yeah.
And that's a great thing to do from somebody who could have just been like, oh, well, I guess you can't ask a question. Let's keep on moving this line because time's money. Let's keep on doing it.
Or they could have done what I've seen happen in some panels where they try and finish out the person's sentence.
Yeah.
Just to kind of move it along quicker. And it's just like, don't do that. You're robbing someone of an experience.
Yeah. But where you're like, oh, I think you're trying to say this. And they'll probably be like, yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a fantastic panel. I really like her body of work as a voice actor. I think she does a fantastic job. Powerpuff Girls. Why couldn't I think of that? Powerpuff Girls.
Powerpuff Girls.
Bubbles. That was like one of her main characters and stuff like that. But yeah, she does a fantastic voice work. It was really cool to see her in person and just see her in her like natural talking voice and just enjoying being there and answering people's questions.
Sure.
And even like taking some requests and doing random things that people were asking her to do, which was super cool.
Cool.
So that was that hour. And then I, of course, so with cons, as I'm sure some of our listeners know, I love doing karaoke. I always, at particular cons, try to find the karaoke place. Because, boy golly, I'm going to sing a song. Just because it's a lot of fun. I enjoy it.
And you get to fill your attention meter.
I do. I get to go, hey, look at me goofing off right here. So, I had been on Friday spending a lot of time over at the video game track. Sure. Well, I saw that the video game track had a karaoke.
Oh, specific panel. To the video games?
Video games, yeah.
Okay.
Because there were a couple of other, like, karaoke panels, but a lot of them were, like, Klingon karaoke or, like, movie karaoke and
did
things like that.
Did anyone karaoke System of a Down playing the Link and Come to Town?
No. Yeah. Somebody did, like, loophole it and sang, like, a more popular song, and they're like, yeah, this was in Saint Rose 3. And it's like, okay, right. Yeah. So I guess we can do any sort of popular song,
sure.
Which is fine. I don't care. But people were doing like Parappa the Rappa. Oh, yeah. With a punch, kick.
Not to quote Obi-Wan, but that is a name that I've not heard in a long time. Long time.
So I knew that this, like, it was very niche, and that I could probably get in quickly. I lined up. And I was like, all right, video games. What songs do I know from heart? Because you have to know it from your heart.
Okay.
Because you're not looking at the screen when you're performing this.
Sure.
You're not reading some sort of words because you're out there performing.
Well, some people are. You may not be, but some people are.
You are out there performing. And then it dawned on me, something that I watched every day when I was little.
Okay. Super Mario Brothers Super Show?
No.
Oh.
And it dawned on me, I was like, Pokemon theme song. Everybody knows the Pokemon theme song.
Everyone's also got that queued up, I bet.
So, yeah, I was worried about that. So I was like, okay, so what would be my second one? And I was like, I know, it's going to be a horrible song that goes on for 5 minutes that people just hate. The DK rap. Have you ever heard of the DK rap?
Yes, I've heard. I've imagined when you said it goes on for 5 minutes, I was like, oh, it's probably the DK rap.
Yes. So for those of you who don't know the DK rap, I believe it was one of the Donkey Kongs. I think
64,
yeah. That came out, and it was accompanied by a rap in the starting credits. Now, this was a rap that went on for 5 minutes because it had to introduce you into the entire Donkey crew. But the guy who's rapping it just doesn't feel like he wants to be there.
Yeah.
He's rapping it slow. He's like, DK. Donkey Kong.
DK.
Donkey Kong is here.
Yeah.
So, and it goes on just...
A long time.
Yeah, for
YouTube
5 minutes.
YouTube it, yeah.
So when I got up there, luckily no one had done the Pokemon theme song.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So I signed up for that. I was like, all right, time to do this. And I sit in the front because I love seeing other people perform.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm cheering them on like, yeah, you're doing a great job. Somebody did a song from Sonic. I believe it was the Sonic World song. So it was super cool.
I'm not familiar, but...
Sonic. a lot of people were doing, like, songs from Mario.
Yeah.
Then, like I said, there was a song that somebody did. It was all in Japanese. I don't know what, like, video game it was from.
DDR, maybe?
Maybe.
The hand-wavy one that...
Maybe? But this woman sang it, like, and she didn't even look at the screen to read the words. She knew it from heart. And it was all... I remember now. It was the Final Fantasy X song that...
Oh, wow, that's a poll.
Yeah, I know. I was like, wow, you really love...
That's impressive.
Yeah, Final Fantasy X's a solid game. It's up there on my, like, favorite Final Fantasies.
Okay.
Yeah, Final Fantasy VII, Final Fantasy X, Final Fantasy XV.
Okay, is X the one with the Blitzball?
Yes. You're in the water with Waka.
Yep.
Not a fan.
No, not at all.
What about Ten Two? Ten Two?
Nope.
With the ladies?
That's even more Ten.
So yeah, I got up there, and the song starts playing, and everybody knows this song, so everybody's getting ready to sing. I'm belting it out.
Okay.
I might have had a couple of drinks in me. I'm yelling out, Pokemon! Yeah. and this guy who is dressed up as a Pikachu jumps up with me and starts singing as well as
I wish I were there to take video.
Yeah. I was running up and down the aisles, you know, like, not shaking people's hands, but, like, giving them high fives, like, getting them to sing with me. And it was amazing because everybody knows that song. You know what to do. You know what to sing. You're trying to capture them all to be the best.
That was a song that they played at the Cybertronic Spree show.
So, yeah.
Yeah, it's similar wavelength. Everyone, yeah.
It's a song that everybody can kind of get behind.
Sure.
So that was a lot of fun. And then, Saturday, it's still Saturday, mm-hmm. Saturday night, I go to the Heroes and Villains Ball. Oh, so I'm dressed up as Krillin.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. How was that bald cap?
That bald cap sucks. Okay. So I was dressed up, and this is why I didn't remember until, like, right now that I dressed up as Krillin, was that bald cap sucked.
Okay.
I wore that bald cap for about an hour and a half. And I was just getting all sweaty. The spirit gum that I had in there was, like, sticking to my hair. It was kind of, like, dripping down in my eyes. It was not good.
So I have a question.
Yes.
And only because it has to do with a bald cap.
Sure.
In costuming, is a podcast I listen to, one of the guys on it went to a D&D meetup dressed up as Minsk from Forgotten Realms, which is a gigantic barbarian shaved head. He's got a little hamster.
Nice.
He said that he did not realize when you seal the bald cap, when you peel it off, it's basically a bowl filled with sweat.
Yeah. Because, I mean, your hair is sweating. Your scalp is sweating.
Yeah.
As you're walking around. Luckily, I did not have that bald cap on for too long. So I didn't get, I assumed the full monsoon of sweat.
Yeah.
But I did get a bit of sweat. Also, I had gotten the key from Amazon, which wasn't probably the best because it was like 100% polyester.
Yeah, no, that's no good.
So I was just sweating buckets.
Oh, that's no good.
And I had it on for about an hour and a half, and I was like, I'm done. So I luckily still had my Lil Mac costume, so I switched into that.
Okay.
So I went to the Superheroes and Villains Ball, which was nice. I didn't actually stay there too long, just because, again, they were playing a lot of just, like, popular music.
Sure. And it wasn't themed.
Yeah, and it was just kind of a dance party, and I was getting a little hungry. So I decided, I'm just going to walk around and look at costumes. So that's
perfectly valid option at a con at, like Dragon Con.
Yes, because, you know, everybody's cosplaying. Yeah. You know, you have all sorts of different level of people cosplaying, you know, with the professionals at a very high tier level, and then just the random people who decide to throw on some boxing gloves.
Like yourself.
Yeah. So I went and I was chilling with some friends and I was eating a pizza, and this Sayami from One Punch.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And
Saitama?
Saitama. Saitama.
Saitama.
Saitama. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Spider-Man were talking. And they were like, oh, you know, I bet I can do more push-ups than you. And he was like, no, I bet I can do more push-ups than you.
That's how he trains.
Yeah. And I jumped in there. I was like, I bet I could do more push-ups than all of you. And they're like, all right, it's on. Sorry. Zach has pointed out the spikes in audio.
Yep.
Because I'm getting super excited about this.
Yep.
I bet the spikes, I didn't see the spikes about karaoke, but I'm sure they're probably high too.
Yeah.
So I was like, yes, I am going to do this push-up contest with you guys. Let's do it. So we go down on the Marriott floor. Marriott floor. Which, this is the second day of con, so it's not super sticky, but it's still kind of sticky.
Technically, it's the third.
Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah, because
they started selling Thursday badges.
Yeah. So the floor is pretty sticky. But, you know, I had my hand wraps, so it wasn't too bad. So we start doing push-ups, and we're doing about, like, 20, and then Spider-Man bows out. He's like, I'm done. I can't keep on doing this.
Yeah.
So me and Saitama. I don't know why I want to keep on saying Sayori. Oh, because of, I've been playing some Doki Doki.
Oh, gotcha.
Saitama.
Like the weapon that Raphael uses in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Oh, man, this is great.
And the brand of drum that Dave Grohl played.
Me and One Punch Man.
Okay, you and One Punch Man.
we were going, and I could tell that he was definitely getting tired, but I do a lot of push-ups. So he got to about 35 and bowed out, and I was like, yay, I'm the winner. So when I went back to my friends, they all clapped. They're like, great, Stuart, you got it. And they're like, here's a pizza. And I continued to eat my pizza without even washing my hands or anything. So I'm surprised I don't have all the diseases.
Well, I mean, you got to build up your resistance. That's how you do it.
Probably have most of the diseases.
Yeah.
And that was pretty much my Saturday. Just watched other people's cosplays, which were amazing. Cool. Again, I'm kind of going back to the fact that it really felt a lot less crowded because I was in the Marriott and I was able to walk around, take pictures of people. I did get a fantastic picture of all the girls from Doki Doki, so that was super cool.
Oh, that's cool. Someone was group cosplaying?
Yeah, nice. Yeah, which it was really nice. I got a lot of other photos. You know, we can always put these up on the Facebook. I think we should put up your,
Mr. Party?
Yeah, Mr. Party.
I kind of want to make that my profile picture.
You should. I'm surprised you haven't already.
Okay, well, cool. So, on, Sunday, then.
Yes, Sunday.
I only went to one panel.
Oh,
during the day, because I spent most of the day in the vendor hall. So, I'll talk about my vendor hall buys after.
Sure.
But, so, Sunday, the panel that I went to, with my wife was Make Mine Marvel Monsters, the 1970s.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of dug into the horror comics that Marvel was putting out in the 70s.
Yeah.
A couple that they focused on, one of them was Groot's first appearance.
Oh, cool.
Because Groot was originally this giant tree monster that's trying to take over the world. So he was originally a villain. And then the other one that they talked about for a while was Tomb of Dracula, which I had never heard of, but I really, really want to pick up a copies now where I can find them at, like, other conventions, maybe.
Oh, cool.
So, in the 70s, Marvel had this agreement with Toho and I think a couple of other Japanese animation studios where, you know, Marvel could make Godzilla comics and Toho could make Spider-Man shows, which is where you get Spider-Man. Spider-Man is that version is I think the term is tonkatsu, where it's kind of like Ultraman, where Spider-Man's actually an alien. And he blows up to giant size to fight monsters.
Yeah, I've seen, like, his mech.
He has a mech, and he has this, like, flying car type thing that you see sometimes in comic shops if they have, like, merch and stuff for sale that's not, like, comic or game related. So one of the things that came out of this was an anime movie, I guess an OVA. For Tomb of Dracula. And the panelists kept reiterating how bad it is and how you don't need to watch it. And they showed screenshots of Dracula being spied on, but he's hungry, and so he goes into this diner and orders a cheeseburger. And they
As
Dracula would do. And so the screenshot they had was him taking a bite and then the subtitle saying, cheeseburger. Right? And so they're talking about how bad it is, and they're ticking off all these things, and I know you know my taste in movies, and
these are ticking all of your yeses.
Yeah, I was like, you're not saying anything that dissuades me from wanting to see this. Like,
you're just telling me that I should watch it.
Telling me I should watch it and wallow around in its particular brand of stink.
Yeah. Who knows? Maybe that'll be one of our topics.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, if I can find a copy of it, I will.
I will look on the interwebs.
But yeah, like I you can probably find it on YouTube now. But I haven't checked. But
maybe.
Probably. And then, so what did you do during the day?
During the day?
Yeah.
Okay. I thought Sunday. You were going to finish off with vendors. So what I did was I went to Dragon Con's voice acting audition simulator, which was super cool.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
So this was a panel where there were two professional voice actors.
Okay.
One was from Arkham Asylum. I believe he did the Scarecrow's voice. He is also in Looney Tunes as Speedy Gonzalez.
Okay.
So you have that particular voice actor, and then you had another voice actor who basically does commercials, where he is the guy who's
telling you about acting.
Yeah, and the thing is, guess which one gets more money?
The commercials.
Yeah, it's the commercials, obviously, yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, voice acting isn't all about, like, oh, voice acting this particular cartoon or anime or video game.
Yeah.
It's commercials. And
anything with a voiceover.
Yeah. And it was really cool because they gave us a lot of... Oh, and they were out there in the line basically just like talking to us, which was super cool, as we were waiting for the panel to empty out from the last one. And they were just giving like little tips and tricks and things like that. Because this was for anyone who is seriously interested in being a voice actor. And the great thing about the internet these days is you can audition from wherever. You don't have to live in, like, New York or L.A.
Exactly.
It probably does help because you can get, like, agents there.
Well, like, going back to Tara Strong, from one of the documentaries that I watched...
Yeah, she has a recording studio in her house.
Yeah, in her home, and she just, like, uploads the files, and that's it.
And the guy who was doing the commercials also has a studio in his home.
Yeah.
Because he's like, I live in North Carolina. I basically record everything at my house. Where the guy who was doing voice acting for the video games and for TV actually lived in Los Angeles.
Okay.
Yeah. Where he had an agent who basically, you know, gave him these audition times and he would go and audition for them. Where the guy who was doing the commercials made enough money where he was like, I'm just going to live where I enjoy living and have a studio and
record it. I mean, really, that's what I want.
Yeah.
That's the dream.
Which is super awesome, yeah. So they basically gave us tips how to, like, do a audition tape.
Cool.
And then they called on three people to come up to do reads. Three women. And they gave them a cool, you know, read, which is basically you look at the script for the first time for about a minute. Come up with a voice. Something. Background, because, you know, having a background for the particular voice also helps. And they basically performed.
Cool.
Which was super awesome. The girls definitely hit it out of the park. I think they did great. And another thing is, when you're doing these audition tapes, when you state your name and who you are reading for, you want to do it in the voice of the character.
Yeah, it separates you, yeah.
Well, that, and it gives you some practice first. Yeah. So they can, you know, you can sort of warm up into that character.
Sure.
Because you definitely don't want to be like, oh, you know, I'm Stuart reading for the voice of Legolas. You want to do it in Legolas's voice or something along those lines. Which, again, the girls hit it out of the park, and then they called up for three guys. Of course, I was trying to get up there, but not this time. The room was packed. It was a packed room.
Yeah, I heard about that. That's.
And the guys did all right. They were doing all right. I would definitely, you know, say that the girls did better. But it was really cool just to sort of get that perspective, because once you did your read, the voice actors would tell you what you would need to improve upon. And what...
Oh, that's way more helpful than the portfolio advice, or the...
Yeah. Yeah, they would say, oh, okay, yeah, that sounded great, maybe you could work on a little bit more inflection or something like that, and then they would say, why don't you try it with a different voice, like an Irish voice. Give it an Irish voice.
Yeah.
Because they were saying that a lot of people, you know, you would go in and do a read, and you're not just doing one read. You will do the read, but then you'll switch up your voice. And the people who are trying, you like, the producers might ask you, oh, can you do it this way? Or can you do it that way? And then you have to come up with some ways of your own, because they might not be thinking of a particular voice, but if you wow them with a voice, then you get in there.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I was watching a documentary. It's the one that... John DiMaggio, the guy that voices Bender, did on Voice Actors called I Know That Voice.
Yeah.
And there's a guy in there who's just like, okay, now take your best voice, and then if you want to be a voice actor, on the spot, do 20 different variations of that one voice that are all different.
And as good.
And as good, yeah.
Another great piece of advice was from the guy who was doing commercials. He said, if you ever want to do a commercial thing, a good read to put on your demo tape would be get anything that's printed, any printed paper, you know, like a magazine ad or a newspaper or something, and then read it and put on your best, like, commercial voice. Because if you do any other, like, sort of commercial... You know, if you take it from TV or radio or something, they already have that voice.
Yeah.
So you want to make yourself unique. And with print, they don't have a voice for the print yet.
Yeah.
And you definitely want to try to take from a commercial that doesn't have a popular voice.
Sure.
Like Geico. Everybody knows the Geico Gecko voice.
Sure.
Yeah. So you want to try to look for something like... Usually he said go for medical things, because, you know, medical field doesn't have that much voice, so,
makes sense. Be
the news voice of Viagra, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense.
It does. So, that was really cool. It was really knowledgeable. I would definitely go there again. And, I think with us doing this podcast and everything, like, learning about our inflections and everything along those lines.
Yeah, the verbal tics.
Yeah, will help us. I know, just just beforehand, I was talking about how I need to work on some things.
Yeah.
Yeah. Listening back on some of these old podcasts, you're like, ooh, did I really sound like that? Did I really stumble upon that one word?
Yeah.
I'm going to look back and I'm going to be like, why couldn't I think of that One Punch Man? Yeah, no. It's going to be silly. But yeah, that's what I ended up doing in the morning. I've got a couple of other things.
Because my next thing is at night.
So. Oh, okay. So I went to a panel afterwards called The History of Video Gaming Hardware.
Okay.
Which was super cool. It was very technical. Basically, we went through console by console. You know, the old Nintendo.
Starting from when?
Nintendo. The NES.
Okay.
Yeah. And just went up to the newest things right now, the PlayStation 4.
Like, just with Nintendo? Or
no, with everything.
Jesus. How did... Okay.
Yeah. So, this was a professor from Georgia Tech. Who was super big into hardware, video games. He had put together this PowerPoint presentation.
Yeah.
And each slide was a particular system.
Sure.
And then he would talk about it and stuff like that. So it was good. It was nice. I don't really have much to say about it because it did kind of technically go over my head a bit. But it was just kind of cool to see some of these consoles because he took a lot of pictures of them opened up and like all the pieces pulled out and just be like, oh, that actually had like a video card in it.
Yeah.
So it was fun.
Did he just focus on the big ones or did he go into like the TurboGrafx-16,
no,
which was actually an 8-bit thing, even though it has 16 in the name.
And no, he just focused on the big ones, because he didn't even go to the Dreamcast. I was kind of hoping to hear about the Dreamcast, but he mainly focused on Microsoft, Sony, and Nintendo.
Oh, okay. All right, yeah, you could fit that into an hour, because, I was sitting here, and I was just like,
yeah.
And there's a lot of
Costs. Yeah. And some of them we just kind of glossed over, like the Sega Saturn. He was like...
It was out for 3 years.
Yep. There you go.
Okay, there you go.
Should have gone to PlayStation.
Yeah, that was the lesson you should have walked away from. Should have gotten a PlayStation.
So, that was fun. That was a good time. I will say, again, it was kind of more technical than anything else. And that was... basically the two panels that I went to.
Okay,
because I also kind of went through the dealer's room, and then we both met up for the masquerade.
Yeah, so why don't you talk about the masquerade? Because I had a mishap with dinner.
So what we did was we all went into Zach and his wife's room. And since their hotel wasn't part of the... main four hotels, we ended up getting a streaming pass so we could stream this big masquerade.
Yeah.
Because none of us really wanted to go to the actual location. We just kind of wanted to chill, eat, drink, and enjoy ourselves. There's a masquerade game that you play, though, where, first of all, I see your face.
No, I don't know what game this is. So what's...
So it's a game of you're watching for a couple of things. Kids that have been forced in to the masquerade by their parents.
Yeah, that's one. That's an unfortunate one.
It is unfortunate.
A lot of times you can tell that the kids have
don't care.
They didn't want to do it, and their parents were like, no, this will be fun. It'll be like Halloween. Go do it.
Yeah. Fine. I made this costume, and they just don't care.
Yeah.
Second one is you drink every time you see somebody's original OC.
Yeah, I will say that's more of a... like an anime convention type thing
that
happens more like...
There were a few OCs there.
Okay.
Where you're just like, what's that from? Oh, that's from nothing. Okay.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, I mean, if it's backed up with really good construction of costume.
If your costume's awesome, great.
That's fine.
That's awesome.
That's awesome. But I would say you may want to just have it be like, this is my character that I play in the weekly D&D game I have with me and my friends.
Yeah.
I wouldn't include the 6-page backstory.
Yeah, don't. Don't. Because that's because another one is if it goes longer for 3 minutes, you take a drink. Because some people decided, oh, you know, I'm going to have this whole story play out while I'm up there. This is a costume contest, not
pre-record your skits, I would say.
Yeah, but don't even have a skit. Like, this isn't this isn't theater. This isn't like you're putting on a skit.
Yeah, I would say I would prefer to just see.
I just want to see your costume.
Working on the costume.
Yeah, do a couple cool moves. Like 30 seconds, maybe a minute. Great. If you're going over 3 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, I do like what they do with the. What level is it? It's like the master class.
Mm-hmm.
Where they talk about the. Time that it took to construct, what it was made out of, and how the pieces are fabricated.
Yeah.
I find that interesting just from a, like, wow, that's something I'll never be able to do type standpoint.
And the thing is, like, if you are going to perform a piece, do it to music. Like, do a musical piece so people can, you know, listen to the music and watch you dance. Don't do an actual skit. Like, somebody decided to do a skit from Twilight Zone.
From Twilight Zone?
Yeah, the Twilight Zone. Where it was the one where everybody is ugly and they're trying to change that woman who has a normal face to an ugly face. But at the very end, you don't know that everybody's ugly. So they did like a theater performance of that.
That's strange.
Yeah, and they pre-recorded everything, but it didn't really translate well because again, it's a costume contest and no one was really in costume because everybody had like doctor's gowns on. But one of the people who won, because there's multiple categories, were these three women that were dressed fantastic, like movie detailed of the Anderson sisters, from Hocus Pocus.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
And so their costumes are great. Their body types were great too. Like they looked like them. They performed. I'll put a spell on you, and everybody was getting into it. It was about 3 minutes. It's a 3-minute song.
Sure.
But you didn't feel like the time was just ticking by. Like, they were performing, they were moving around, they were singing. Again, they weren't singing, they had the song playing, but they still were performing, and their costume were on point. That is great, and they actually won. They won the Masters.
Yeah, and I will say, like, I don't want it to turn into a...
Yeah, no, I'm not...
Don't do this, yeah, but, like...
Yeah,
because...
I'm just saying, be aware there are people doing a drinking game, and you might make somebody take a drink.
Yeah, I mean, having a little bit more self-awareness, maybe, might work to the audience, to your benefit and the audience's benefit, if you keep in mind that it's more of a costume contest, and not necessarily a platform for like skits or,
you know, the perform
or things like that. But that's also limiting. I mean, because the whole purpose of it is for people to get up.
But that's the thing, is there's plenty of other Dragon Con's so big, you can find that stage for that appropriate skit somewhere else. I know that the Masquerade is the big thing, but still, you know, find something more appropriate. The Masquerade was fun. It was fun to watch it. There were a lot of cool costumes. Mm-hmm. A lot of people who had come out there and, you know, gave it their all. Yes, there were some things that ran a little bit long, but That's okay. That just means that I'm drinking. but it was fun. And I think both me and your wife made a couple of predictions who were going to win.
Sure.
And we were right. Because again, the Anderson sisters were fantastic again.
Yeah, I remember her talking about how like they were screen accurate.
Yeah.
Like
it was It was down to the T. It was amazing. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. Again, you know, you're just enjoying yourself. People know that they're getting up there to perform. You know, I'm assuming now they don't have the stormtroopers because they're just going to let people perform. They know what it is.
Yeah.
They have, I'm sure they cut off a certain amount of people at a particular number. Like, we've got 30 people in here. Let's not take any more.
Sure.
And call it a day.
So, do you remember who won overall? Because I remember last year, I think it was someone who, she was cosplaying D.Va, and she also had a working mech.
Oh, that's
radio
cool.
Controlled. And so she won. Do you remember who won for the non-professional? Because you said this was the Hocus Pocus sisters were the master class.
Yes, was the master class.
Okay.
Overall, I believe it was one of the Monster Hunter outfits.
The guy I mean, there with were the, a lot.
The
of
guy with
this year,
a great sword, and he had the armor, and
sure,
it looked really cool. And he spent like I think a year creating all of this, so you could tell that. The detail was there, that the love was in his armor.
Sure.
And really, when he came up there, he performed, like, a couple of moves from the game, and then just walked off, or turned around to show people, like, the entire thing.
Yeah, because you want to do the catwalk.
Yeah. And then just walked off, and, yeah, it was pretty cool. Like, he had working lights in it, the sword was just huge.
Yeah, that's something that I've always been fascinated with costumes when the people, and like you were saying with the video game character, when people can work LEDs and lights and stuff into their costume, like that's
pretty
really,
cool.
It's very eye-catching. Because, I mean, it's supposed to be, but.
And then, the kid who won the video game costume contest.
Yeah.
The Fortnite kid.
Yeah.
Also won the kids portion of the masquerade.
Was that the one with the tomato head?
Yes.
And the mustache?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, good for him. I'm glad that he
Remember seeing a highlight of that with him, like, coming out and doing the little dance.
Yeah, doing the little Fortnite dance. Yeah. He was a good performer. Like, and again, he didn't spend too much time on stage or anything like that. But he was like, I made this costume 100%.
Nice.
Yeah, that is nice. Good work, kid, making that costume 100%. Good work.
Is that a reference to something?
No.
Unfortunately. Okay.
That was it.
Okay.
Oh, I went to a party afterwards.
Oh, what party?
The Mechanical Masquerade.
Oh, how many people were there? Because I don't remember seeing a whole lot of steampunk and alternative history.
There weren't
stuff this year.
I mean, and even
it looks like it looked to me like goth and metal kids were making a comeback.
Yeah. I had brought a mask that I wore to previous masquerades and stuff like that.
Cool.
I wore brown pants and suspenders, and that was steampunk, and that was probably, and that was the level of what people were doing at the steampunk thing. There weren't, like, a bunch of gears or people with goggles. Well, there were some goggle people, but there weren't, like, a bunch of people with, like, steam backpacks and stuff. A lot of people just wore brown pants, some suspenders.
Okay.
Goggles, weird-looking glasses.
Yeah.
And it was nice, because this one actually had themed music. Like, this was, you know, had steampunk-infused.
Well, Acme Park was there this year. Did they play?
Okay. Yeah, they did.
Gotcha.
So, because they had a live band, which was super cool. And then, after live band was done, they put on the DJ, so.
Well, that's cool.
And then,
I mean, because
again, I really enjoyed that this music that they were playing fit the theme of the party.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, I've said in other shows, like, I'm not a huge fan of the way a lot of steampunk is.
Yeah.
Because a lot of it, to me, is like historical revisionism of, like, let's go back to old-timey times where it was, you know.
Yeah.
let's ignore colonialism and all this other stuff and just focus on the steam-powered stuff. But
because that's cool.
But I like Yavne Park because I have a game system that the guy behind Yavne Park wrote.
Oh, cool.
Where you play in the world that they've created. Because they make concept albums.
Yeah.
And their whole thing is that, like, it's not in the past. This is in the future. This is like a post-apocalyptic society, and society is rebuilt, and steam powers where it's at. So, like, I like that type of
that's
future history type stuff. Yeah. Like, it ignores all the bad things, or just doesn't even address them. Like, it's just like, okay, no, this is the future. This is like Star Wars. Like,
this isn't revisionism. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, no, the Mechanical Masquerade in years past was cool. If you had to estimate how many people were there.
Because I got there a little late. Okay. It started at 10. Sure. And, you know, walking back and everything from there. It was still pretty crowded. I mean, I don't know, maybe 300?
Okay. Was it a ticketed event, or is this one of the... Okay.
Just that you went to. It was pretty cool. They had some tables and everything where you could sit down and have, like, drinks and stuff like that, so...
Tea?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, it was a lot of fun, and, you know, I called it a night and went back home after that.
Cool. Well, yeah, after the masquerade... We went early to get in line to see the Crew Shadows.
Yes.
Because the Crew Shadows are probably Dragon Con's house band at this point. This was their 26th year.
Yeah, and everybody at Dragon Con kind of knows who they are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they always put on a good show. Now, with the opening band for them, because like I said, we wanted to line up to be sure we got good seats. Good spot.
Oh, it's standing.
So it's in one of the Hyatt's Centennial rooms. So like the back half of the room is seated.
Okay.
And the front half is standing.
Mm-hmm.
So we just grabbed seats for Ice Centilla playing. I've seen them play before. They're a Chicago band. They kind of sound like if Evanescence were not aimed at teenagers but aimed at adults. Like, they kind of have that sound.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, that's... I don't want to yuck anyone's yum. That's fine. They're not my favorite band.
Yeah.
But they were celebrating putting out a new album this year. So that's kind of why they were on the road again. I think it was their first one in like 5 years.
Oh, wow.
Now, with the Crew Shadows... They took the stage at 1:30 in the morning. Like, in the schedule, it is for 1:30.
Yep.
And they play probably 2 hours.
Whew.
Did
you stay there the entire time?
Oh, hell yeah.
There you go.
There was a false start in the beginning because, honestly, they use so many electronic stuff that... I wouldn't be surprised if they overloaded a circuit because, like, they just lost sound completely, except for, like, the drum machine and one of the violinists.
Yeah.
Now,
you know, when they took the stage, I assume you guys got up and you were...
Oh, yeah. We were, like three people back.
How many people were there? If you had to estimate.
If I had to estimate, probably... Probably around 600.
600?
600 or so. 700, something like that.
That's pretty good.
I mean, maybe more. Like, because I couldn't see over the crowd behind me to see if there were any people sitting in the seated area.
Yeah, I mean, for 1:30 in the morning, that's
yeah,
good.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good crowd. That's a pretty damn decent crowd. But they were entertaining as always.
Nice.
They... did the thing that I think they started doing it last year, but whenever I see it happen, I'm like, nope, I want no part of that. Is the Crew Shadows feeds off of the audience energy, and so playing the very last song, they invited the audience to rush the stage and get on the stage.
Oh, okay.
And so if you go through Imgur and look at Dragon Con pictures or Crew Shadow pictures or anything like that, you'll see these photos of like an overloaded stage. I am always like, nope.
That stage is going to fall apart.
Because I do not want that stage to crumble. Because they get a lot of people on it. But
and these are the collapsible stages that they move and stuff like that.
Yes, they are.
This isn't like a fully structured stage that sound. No, yeah.
Yeah. The
just to tell the audience.
Oh, yeah. Because it's in a hotel ballroom. Yeah. So, they just construct that the day before. So, I don't want to be near it. When we started off the show, we were, right next to the stage, but we were directly in front of a subwoofer.
Yeah.
That I did not think was going to be a problem, because the way, in my head, the way a sound wave works is that because a bass note is so large, the closer you are to it, the less deafening it is.
Yeah, I didn't know.
Which I think scientifically makes sense. If anyone's listening, correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, you can send an email to
backrowsupershow@gmail.com. So I thought the closer we were, it wouldn't be a problem.
Yeah.
Now, standing in front of the subwoofer, it was so loud that it felt like someone was just punching me in the chest whenever a bass note hit. And then my wife goes, I'm moving. I feel like I'm going to vomit. Yeah. And I go, yeah, me too. So we kind of scooted to the side and just out of the way of the wave, and we were fine.
But now, were there two other friends with you the entire time?
No. Yeah. No. Okay. Just Richard's wife was with us.
Oh, okay.
I think Richard was just pooped.
And went tired. Bad. Yeah. It happened. 1:30. I was back home at 1:30.
Yeah, no, they took the stage at 1:30, and it was a minor technical issue, and so, which, props to Dragon Con Tech Ops team, you guys are wizards, and you wrapped that up and made sure it started. If I had to estimate, maybe 5 minutes
later. Oh, nice. Yeah.
They were extremely quick at fixing the problem.
Nice.
But yeah, that was the last thing that I went to. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, what about your vendor hall buys? Did you get anything at the vendor hall?
So that was Monday. I went to the vendor hall on Monday. You want to talk a little bit about Monday?
Yeah, I just went to the vendor hall as well. I didn't get anything.
I did a couple things on Monday.
Oh, okay. Yeah, sure.
So the last panel I went to was on Monday, and it was in the anime room. And it was basically
over in the Hilton, or was it?
Yeah, the Hilton. Okay. The Hilton. It was called Your Worst Anime, Salt is Provided. So I was like, well, I have no understanding of what this is. So I go in there, and the guy who's running it, I don't know if this, I'm sure it's fine, but, he said, all right, throughout this entire con, I've been going to restaurants, I've been stealing little salt packets. So everybody get your little salt packet. And we can start this. So we all grab our salt. And then he was like, all right, this is basically a panel where you can stand up and vent about a particular anime. And if people think that you're just being salty, they're going to throw some salt at you. So you have to justify it. You have to say why it's a bad anime. And again, if people just think that you're just being salty,
you're just going to leave.
He gave the first example, which was a decent example, about Inuyasha.
Okay.
And for people who don't know about Inuyasha, the demon, it's a male demon dog who gets, who has to follow this girl.
She unleashes him from some curse.
Something. But she puts a necklace around his,
neck. He basically has to do what she says.
Yeah. And he's like, reverse the roles. What happens if Inuyasha was a female? It's like, it's kind of not that great.
Yeah.
And it goes on for too long, and it doesn't actually conclude and all that stuff. So
yeah, I've never seen the end of it. But I don't think there's an end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was like that. And then some other guy got up, and he was like, Black Clover, which is a new anime, which is pretty all right. He's like, it sucks because I don't like the male antagonist, and we're like, you're just being salty. Which is kind of funny because the people who are salty accumulate the most salt because everybody throws their salt packets at them.
Yeah.
And now they got a bunch of salt to throw at other people.
Okay.
I thought it was pretty clever. I thought it was pretty clever. Afterwards, I went to the dealer room for a little bit. Actually bought nothing.
Oh, nothing.
I bought nothing. Yeah.
Wow.
I went in there. I looked around. Nothing jumped out at me.
Okay.
Which was fine. Then I went to, they have a video game area where they have a bunch of, like, cabinets. They have some DDR machines.
Yeah.
They have a bunch of different other things. They had an old DDR Revolution Extreme. I played that. Yes. This was, like, when we were in college, we would go to this one particular Asian bowling area, lane, not area. Not to actually bowl, but because they had a DDR Extreme.
Yeah.
And it was free.
Free play?
Yeah. So,
oh, nice.
I played the two songs that I remembered, like, over and over again, just to see if I still remember the steps. It was Captain Jack.
Yep.
And Rhythm and Rhyme Police. And I actually remembered all, like, it took me two rounds, but then I started getting back into the groove of things. I was like, yeah, this is pretty cool.
Ayo, Captain Jack.
Ayo, Captain Jack. Bring me down to the railroad track. Anyway, then they had Gundam pods, which were super cool.
Is that like the tank game thing where you get it, pay money to get into a pod and there's like a four-player?
Yeah, which is weird.
Gundam skinned?
It was Gundam skinned. Huh. There's only two pods and you didn't have to pay.
Oh, nice.
But it was all in Japanese.
Oh, well.
So you had to kind of know Japanese to like figure things out. But I got the hang of it. And I was playing through the missions. And it was super cool. Like, it was a lot of fun. You could play somebody if they jumped in the pod, but no one else did. And then other than those two games, I played this, I guess, rhythm game where you tap on the screen and you move your hand around and stuff like that. It was kind of cool. I mean, it seemed like a phone game, but you just tapped and you went with the rhythm and everything like that. Then after I played that, I was like, man, those screens must be dirty, dirty.
Yeah.
And then that was it. I went back home.
Okay. I did not make it over to the gaming area.
Oh, man, it was...
Ever since they've moved it to America's Mart, like, I just... It's so convoluted, and the staff at America's Mart... Not the Dragon Con staff members.
Hang on.
The Dragon Con staff members are great.
Are you talking about the gaming, like, role-playing game, or gaming?
Both.
Okay.
Both.
Because I really do suggest trying to go to the arcade, because it's all free, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, the arcade's a great...
And that's cool, like, free arcade, you don't have to pay.
Yeah, again, the Dragon Con staff, this is not a criticism of Dragon Con staff, this is solely America's Mart staff.
Yeah.
Super unhelpful, super rude.
Nah, like, that sucks.
Yeah. So, yeah, like, this past year, I didn't even make it over there, so... Mm-hmm. Yeah, just one of the missed opportunities. But
I had a lot of fun there.
With, I guess with vendor hall stuff, I wish I were like you and did not spend money on stuff. Because I left with so much stuff I did not intend to.
Yeah, I don't know. It just, nothing jumped out at me. Like, you know, I've got to see something and it's got to, like, speak to me. And
yeah.
I don't know. I just, nothing.
Well,
so what did you grab? What kind of swag did you get?
So, it mainly art prints.
That's cool. Yeah.
This year, we live in a tiny apartment, and there is literally no more room on the walls to put anything.
Hey, you'll find a room.
Red Rocket Farm, I highly recommend their stuff. They were doing this surprise box where you pay them $25. And I like the way they're branded, because on the side of the box, it says...
It says mystery box?
Yeah, They have printed on the side of the box, could be good, could be bad, could be pine cones.
Yeah, well, I don't get people paying $25 for something that they don't know, but...
So...
Each his own.
So...
Don't make
I
me.
Normally don't, but my wife had several things, like, we were standing in line, and they're like, oh, I really like that particular piece that they have. And I like this shirt, but that's way too much. So you pay $25, and she opened it up, and she got, like, a variation of everything that she was just like, I like that, and I like that.
That's good.
So, like, either we were extremely lucky, or because they're consistent, because it's not like they're pulling from a wealth of stuff. Like, they have certain amounts of stock that they're putting into it.
Mm-hmm.
If you like their type of art, like rusty robots and vacant-eyed dogs and things like that, like, if you like that cutesy style, you'll probably like whatever's in it.
Okay.
I also picked up, I finished my collection of Larry Elmore hardcover books. He's the artist that kind of pulled me into fantasy stuff, because he's done the paintings for covers of Dragon Magazine and the old Dragonlance novels and stuff like that. He has a very iconic style, so I got his black and white hardcover, the Snarf Quest hardcover, which is a comic that he did for Dragon Magazine back when TSR was putting it out. And then the new paperback version of it.
Cool.
And then the last thing that I got that I'll talk about is the... So Fantasy Flight has the Star Wars...
IP?
IP for like, role-playing games.
Yeah, and for, like, their miniature games and all sorts of other things. Yeah.
They put out an anniversary edition of the West End game. It's the 30th anniversary West End Games version, like the one that Lucasfilm used to send to some of the writers and go, this is how you do world creation for these worlds.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Writing for them.
Yeah.
I played it years ago because some kid that I went to middle school with, his dad had a copy of him. and so we played it. It's super fun. It's just a D6 system.
Yeah. Nice.
That they've used in other lines, but it's really cool. Fantasy Flight, I think, is going to stop printing them at the end of the year. So if you want one,
jump on that
friendly local game store.
That's right.
But yeah, that was it. That was Dragon Con this year.
Woo, man, that was that was definitely a Dragon Con.
Ticket prices go up again.
I
think they've increased because they were at $85. I did not get it because I don't know. Like, there's some stuff that's up in the air, so I don't know if I'll be able to attend next year. I really want to, but for right now, at least, I'm holding off on buying tickets. But the tickets do get more expensive as you go.
Yeah, and you can't really transfer them. So if you do buy a ticket, you can't, like, sell it or transfer it to a friend, which kind of... I understand what they're trying to do there, but it does make things a little bit more inconvenient, unfortunately.
Yeah, it kills me that the first year I went, Eternal memberships were $500.
Yeah.
And I could have just put it on a credit card and not worried
about it.
Call
it a day.
But, yeah.
Thumbs up from me.
Thumbs up from me.
Yeah, that's two thumbs up from the Back Row Super Show.
Yeah, and you know, even though we are fairly interested in similar things, we still had different panels that we went to.
Yeah, again, you know, listening back to this, there's only a few panels that we both went to. But...
Yeah, and then they have 5,000 hours of content over the weekend.
But everything that Zach listed, I would totally be interested in, and probably things that I listed,
absolutely.
Would be interested in.
It's just having too much
manage
stuff
that
to do.
Time.
Yeah.
Manage that time. And again, you know, going back to earlier what we said, it's fantastic that they have an app where you can...
make your schedule.
Yeah.
Looks like the days of highlighting a gigantic volume in your hotel room when you get there, those are the way...
But don't worry, they still have a physical copy of their schedule.
Do they?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't see any.
Yeah, when you went and picked up your ticket. Because they put it on a glossy piece of... Yeah. Because they used to have, those, like, flimsy pieces
like
of paper.
Stock.
Yeah. Yeah, no, they actually put it in, a fancy book this time.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
Where a lot of people thought it was just, like, information or...
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah,
I didn't know that.
So they didn't
even
grab it. But, I mean, with the app, you don't even really need it.
Yeah. But, yeah, highly recommend.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll see you guys next year.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, we're always out there trying new things. Maybe we'll be on a panel or something.
Yeah, maybe. I know I'll be...
And then
be
you...
I know I'll be volunteering at Conjuration, which happens middle of November this
nice.
Year.
Yeah.
It's at the Atlanta Hilton Airport, where we went to 221B.
Nice. I did not know. I'm maybe there.
Yeah.
I may not. You might see a crazy man singing karaoke, and you'll probably know that's me.
Yeah.
But, yeah, depending on schedules and everything, we'll figure it out. But, you know, we'll definitely keep on doing this con coverage.
Yeah.
I think this is a lot of fun. And definitely let us know what you think about these coverage. You can always write us at
backrowsupershow@gmail.com. Yep. And cool. Then Facebook, we obviously post to Facebook.
Yep. We're usually doing something on Facebook.
Yeah. The current book club book is Ready Player One, which will be coming up in the next few episodes.
Yeah.
There
might be a surprise or something in there.
Yeah, there might be a couple of surprise episodes. But, yeah, the next book club book will be Ready Player One.
Yep.
And, yeah, we'll talk about that in a couple weeks.
Sweet. And, as always, we always appreciate you giving us a listen, giving us a download, giving us a like.
I hope you've enjoyed these past 3 hours.
Yes.
That's how long this thing is.
Oh, boy. All right, guys. Well, have a great week, and see you later.
We love you.
Bye. Bye.